50 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Quaker Oatmeal. Police are trying to find five suspects in connection with a shooting and kidnapping in Aurora yesterday. APD spokeswoman Kathleen Walsh says detectives caught a break late last night.
Denver police found the truck unoccupied at 27th and Stored. So Aurora police did have the truck transported to our impound lot where it does await processing.
And that processing is taking place today. The incident began yesterday afternoon when five men came to a home on the 800 block of Oswego near Del Mar Park to close a purchase of the resident's pickup truck. One of the five visitors pistol-whipped and shot the truck's owner. The man who was shot was hospitalized and is expected to recover from a gunshot wound to the groin area. Meanwhile, the suspects kidnapped the victim's brother, 19-year-old Jose Palma Lujan. The victim's pickup truck is the vehicle police recovered, while the suspect's getaway car has been identified as a 1992 Ford SUV with Colorado license plate 013JAR. Meanwhile, police are investigating a pre-dawn auto accident in Aurora that killed one motorist. Spokeswoman Kathleen Walsh says that just before 5, Martin Renteria, traveling northbound on Chambers, allegedly ran a red light at Smith Road and struck a car driven by 42-year-old Salvador Loera. While Renteria was taken to a hospital with injuries that do not appear to be life-threatening, Loera perished at the scene. Charges are pending against Renteria. Alcohol does not appear to be a factor. It's bad enough to have to spend a winter night outdoors. What's worse is being out on the street, homeless, and lacking winter clothing.
Your toes freeze, and your hands freeze, your ears freeze, and you're just cold all over.
That's Eric, a homeless man on Park Avenue West. He's one of many reasons why the Denver Rescue Mission this week is asking for a donation. Here's spokeswoman Greta Ritchie.
We are in great need of winter weather clothing. Anything that you would wear if you're going outside in cold weather conditions. Things such as waterproof boots, long underwear, socks, coats, sweaters, scarves, and hats.
Ritchie says the mission is open 24 hours, meaning any time is a good time to drop off your donation. They're at the corner of 23rd and Park Avenue West. The former chief weapons inspector in Iraq contends the intelligence the U.S., quote, went to war on was wrong. David Kay made that assertion today while testifying before a Senate committee. Kay, who stepped down from his post just last week, also said there was no evidence that suggested Saddam Hussein's regime had weapons of mass destruction on the eve of the war. He added that it is possible that small caches of WMD will never be found in Iraq. WMD were the principal rationale for the U.S.-led war against Iraq. Meanwhile, the White House position on an Iraqi weapons program now seems unclear. During a briefing on Iraqi sovereignty today, White House spokesman Scott McClellan said the Iraq survey group must complete its weapons search.
David Kay has also publicly talked about the importance of letting the Iraq survey group complete its work. The Iraq survey group, the mission of the Iraq survey group is to find the truth.
McClellan also noted that Saddam's regime had WMD and a history of using and building them. In recent days, President Bush has backed away from stating that Iraq did indeed have WMD. Instead, he has said that Saddam Hussein was a gathering threat in the Middle East. He's also said that he believed U.S. intelligence did the best job it could. Senator John Kerry is now 2-for-2 in the Democratic race for the White House. The Massachusetts Democrat and winner of the Iowa caucuses garnered 39% of the votes yesterday in the New Hampshire primary, easily defeating his competitors. Brown University political scientist Professor Darrell West says voters chose experience over anger. From Georgia up to New England, winter storms are creating problems. The combination of snow and ice have been blamed on more than 40 fatal traffic accidents, and power outages are common in the southeastern states. A hostage standoff at an Arizona state prison near Phoenix is now in its 11th day. Negotiators got some encouraging news late yesterday when they were able to get a look at and hear the voice of the corrections officer still being held by two inmates. After dropping yesterday, stocks are higher at this hour. The Dow is up more than 32 points. The Nasdaq up about 3.75. The S&P 500 up also about 3.75. In sports, the Denver Nuggets take on the Chicago Bulls tonight at the Pepsi Center. Nuggets beat the Bulls when they last met in November. No game for the Colorado Avalanche tonight. Avs hit the road tomorrow to play the LA Kings. In college basketball tonight, the CU Buffs host the University of Missouri Tigers. Don't you love the taste of big sweet cinnamon rolls? You'll love it even more in a warm, delicious bowl of cinnamon roll Quaker oatmeal. It's something to smile about. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the network of 17 John Elway Auto Nation showrooms. Colfax in Colorado, the latest accident to come in. Do have a couple injury accidents. Trouble spots, southbound I-25 at Colorado, as well as Federal at Yale, an injury accident. Westbound I-70 at Pecos, watch for an accident, as well as Spear and Auraria Parkway downtown. John Elway is going to the payoffs. They'll help pay off your current vehicle and get you into a new 2004. Same low, no haggle prices, same price match, plus a money-back guarantee. John Elway, honest. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We're going to be keeping the sunshine at least through the end of our work week. Just a few clouds today. High of 46. Later on tonight, down to 27. And tomorrow, lots of sun, just a few clouds, and a high of 50. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under mostly sunny skies, it's 52 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35, or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. The number 303-382-1150, 303-382-1150. We have lots planned for you today. We're going to have John and Abigail Adams in live. You thought they'd been dead for about 1,000 years, right? Well, wait till you find out. They're going to be joining us late or in the broadcast, and so I think you will enjoy meeting them. I'm certainly going to enjoy meeting them, since here they are, walking back from the dead. They will come in full costume, former President John Adams and his wife Abigail. They'll be here. You won't be able to see it, but I will describe it to you. It's kind of like having a nude on the radio. A little of the magic is gone, but then your imagination takes over. I have lots of things that I want to talk about. I haven't had a chance to get to them since I've been back from Italy. This is my second day, and I wasn't too jet-lagged. Not that you care, but anyway, there's the news. First of all, we have to start out with this information, and that is that Michael Jackson is actually not the father of his children. Did you hear that? It's been reported that the wife, the one that he was married to, Debbie Rowe, was artificially inseminated with anonymously donated sperm. Just any old sperm. I don't think she went down to the Nobel Prize winning sperm bank for this crew. And in any event, Michael Jackson is not actually the father, for whatever that may be worth. Also, I see that 5280 magazine has just come out with a list of Denver's top singles. So, of course, I turned to page 110. Where so far I haven't found myself. I guess I'm not a top single. Let's see, who is one of the top singles in Denver? Terry Harrington, 47, a Capricorn. Of course, you have to know that. She's an attorney and trained mediator, specializing in family law, but she doesn't have a family. And then who else do we have here? Here's a guy, but they don't have his name. Oh, Rusty McKinney, 23, a Libra, student at Johnson & Wales, a prep cook, European catering, that's what he wants to do. Someone named Adrian Bashuk, 23, in Aries, who's a national correspondent for CNN. Wendy Wu, 33, Aquarius, musician. Christina Krebs, 47, Libra, assistant professor and director of museum studies, University of Denver. Nick Sugar, Not Telling His Age, Scorpio, Artistic Director of a Theater Company, Melanie Milton, 22 Capricorn, Student Personal Banker, and Denver Broncos Cheerleader. Do you notice something here that's beginning to develop? Jody Brooks, 33, Scorpio, for our television partner, reporter for our television partner, KCNC, CBS 4. She's in there. Paola Votero, 32, Cancer, owner of True Spanish and editor-in-chief of Salon Plus. Eric Miller, 32, Libra, goalie, Colorado Mammoth lacrosse team, senior sales consultant. He's in there. Here's a guy who's a craftsman. He's 37. Here's a hairstylist who's 24. Here's a general counsel for Quark who's 41. And a president of the Cunningham Group, and he's 39. And what do you notice that all this haven't come? Tammy Vigil, Scorpio, 36, reporter Fox, 31, and so on and so on. I don't see Jordan Lyles in there. I don't see my producer, Joe Anderson. Both of them are single. And I don't see me. The radio goddess is not in there. I guess I wasn't one of Denver's top singles. What are they talking about? Singles. Like, what are they talking about? Velveeta? They come in those singles packs, too. Sad news. A charity that we have helped to support here at KNRC Radio called Dress for Success Denver. And this is where you donate barely used or very lightly used clothing, suits and stuff that would be job appropriate for interviews, and you donate these to Dress for Success, and they're used for women who have job interviews, maybe women who've just come off welfare or come out of prison or don't have a lot of money and have a chance for a job and so on. So this has been successful in terms of getting lots of clothing donations, but because the economy has been so bad, because we have $87 billion to spend in Iraq, the donations have dried up for this group, and so Dress for Success Denver is going to shutter its doors. I'm really sorry to hear that. One of the things we talked about yesterday, MoveOn.org. Did you see Nightline last night? They did a whole thing on MoveOn.org. Really, really interesting. All right, here's the story with MoveOn.org. Some of you called in. As you know, they have rejected two ads. They rejected the PETA ad. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or People Eating Tasty Animals. I forget how you want to define it. But PETA wanted to run an ad saying that eating meat will make you impotent. MoveOn.org wanted to run the winner of the Bush in 30 Seconds ad, which happens to be a Denverite, Charlie Fisher, who did the ad, and he did really a fabulous job. And they won't accept it. They're going to accept other ads from the White House. They're going to accept beer advertising and that sort of thing, but they're not going to accept an ad from MoveOn.org. Well, listen to this. So some of you asked, what should you do? And I said, email CBS. Well, you don't know the half of it. Guess what? Over the last 4 days, something incredible has happened. CBS has received over 340,000 emails and phone calls asking it to stop its censorship. Clearly, a huge number of people believe that CBS's refusal to run the MoveOn.org ad while allowing the Bush White House to run an advocacy ad of its own is just plain wrong. So people have been flooding CBS. Do it. CBS.com. Let them know how you can call the comment line at CBS, which is 212-975-4321, or you can call CBS.com. You can write letters to the editor. You can go to MoveOn.org, the website, /CBS/ad/. Go to MoveOn.org or go to CBS.com and see if you can figure out a way. And the comment line, again, if you want to call, 212-975-4321. Finally, MoveOn.org says you can contribute to the conversation in the nation's editorial pages by writing a letter to the editor. And one of our most prolific letters to the editor writer is our listener, Preston. He writes great letters to the editor. They're so good that they are very often published, and very often he references me and or KNRC Radio, and I am really grateful for that. So you can do this as well. They tell you that, remember, brevity is the soul of wit, or as Dorothy Parker once said, brevity is the soul of lingerie, but we won't go there. So make it brief. The key to publication is to pounce on something specific you've seen in the newspaper, such as the Super Bowl advertising. This is the advice they're giving you that might get your letter published. Be sure to include your name and address and especially your phone number when submitting it, because they may need to call you to verify authorship before they'll print the letter. And very often they won't accept a letter for publication unless there is a name and address and a phone number. Your newspaper's letters page should give you an email address or fax number to use. You can try that. So here are a few talking points you can use in your letter. This is from MoveOn.org. It's about free speech. The First Amendment doesn't mean a whole lot if we're denied access to the airwaves. If the White House can run an ad, other groups should be able to run ads also. Previous ads in the Super Bowl have implied that buying drugs finances terrorism, a much more controversial claim than the one that Child's Pay makes. CBS just got a huge favor from the White House. Senator John McCain said that the bill was custom-made for CBS and Fox, which had been lobbying heavily to be able to grow larger. Move On and other groups have been against this bill. Now the White House is allowed to run an ad, and groups like Move On's voter fund are not. What's controversial? CBS claims that it has a policy against running controversial issue ads, but the whole ad is based on fact. President Bush has created a $1 trillion deficit. In fact, according to numbers by the nonpartisan budget congressional, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, that number is actually low. So, you want to write letters to the editor? Get involved. It's kind of fun. It's like performance art. Get involved. See if writing a letter to the editor will get published and make the point. Get your friends, organize them, and bombard CBS.com with your emails protesting their refusal to air the winner of the MoveOn.org competition, Bush in 30 seconds. Do it. Get involved. Do it. It'll be fun. I just got an email from one of you. Let's see. Please consider replacing Enid, says this emailer, whose name is David. David said, Enid is like a shot of bile chased with sulfuric acid. You may wish to comment on that. 303-382-1150. The government has proposed a $755,000 fine against, guess who? The Walmart across the way. Clear Channel Communications for a sexually explicit radio show aired on four stations. The second highest such fine ever proposed. So the FCC Commissioner's chairman recently urged, and that would be Colin Powell's son, Michael Powell, urged that penalties be increased for indecent programming, said the stations, all in Florida, aired various episodes of Bubba the Love Sponge, a total of 26 times. And now, I don't know anything about Bubba the Love Sponge. If someone knows, anyway, they got fined $750,000 for doing it. But that isn't anything compared to my former radio, my former TV station in San Francisco, KRON-TV, Channel 4. Wait till you hear this. The FCC also announced that it wanted to fine KRON, Channel 4 in San Francisco, the maximum amount of a fine for broadcasting indecent material in its morning news program. What do you think they broadcast in the morning news program? During an interview with performers of Puppetry of the Penis, who wore capes but nothing else, the actors exposed themselves. The FCC said the station should have expected that such a display could have occurred and should have taken steps to prevent it. So, remember we gave away tickets for Puppetry of the Penis? Well, I guess one of these guys, I asked you to use your imagination. I did not go into a graphic detail. But KRON TV in San Francisco, well, you know what? San Francisco is like Venice, its own nation state. Oh, I have to tell you something about Venice. No cars in Venice, of course. And 3 miles square. This is what somebody told me about Venice, that it has the lowest heart attack rate in the whole world. Or maybe in Europe, I can't remember what they said, but a very extremely low heart attack rate, heart disease rate. And you know why? Even the elderly walk. Everybody walks. And you don't see the obesity, and things are not supersized like they are here. If you get a water glass, it's very small. The Cokes in the cans, not as big as the Cokes in the cans in the U.S. Cokes in the cans, very much smaller than that. So they are used to smaller sizes. They're not supersized, so you don't see porcomorphs, denting the cobblestones. That's what they don't want to dent the cobblestones, so that's why they don't want to supersize things. You know, it is was founded in about the year 500, so they and it is sinking. So they're probably wanting not to encourage pork chops to visit Venice, because if too many pork chops are in the Piazza San Marco at the same time, who knows, it could sink, and it is already at the lowest point. So when they get aqua alta, what they call aqua alta, the rising water, if the tides are high and there's rising water, the first place it gets flooded is Piazza San Marco. Okay, here it is. The results last night. Kerry won. He beat Dean by, I don't know, about 12 points or so. I can't remember. I saw, let's see. Kerry had 39%. Dean had 26%, so 13 points. Clark had 13%. Edwards had 12%. Lieberman had 9%. All right, this is my take on the New Hampshire. These are my take on the candidates. First of all, I think I'm getting more bored with Wesley Clark. For me, he's like a one-trick pony, a little bit. I liked him a lot in the beginning, but I don't know. Somehow he doesn't have steam at the moment. This could change. Edwards, it feels to me, is coming up. Kerry definitely is on fire. Dean is 13 points below Kerry, and they're spinning it that Dean did very well, a solid second. Now, I want to ask you something. What do you think the point was of Dean? Was it simply to galvanize the anger that Democrats feel towards George W. Bush? Do Democrats feel that Kerry is more measured, more experienced, more temperamentally suited? But the bad rap on Kerry is that he has a lot of good ideas. He starts a lot of stuff, but he doesn't follow through on things. He makes impassioned speeches, and then that's the last you hear of that. So that's what's going on. And I would like your take on some of this stuff. John Kerry scored big among New Hampshire Democratic primary voters most concerned with beating President Bush in November. Dean edged out Kerry among voters angry with the Bush administration and most opposed to the war in Iraq, but not by enough to undo the damage apparently caused by his screaming speech after he placed third in Iowa a week ago. I heard the audio on that speech. It was, to me, exhorting the troops. I didn't hear it as a screaming speech. Why is Howard Dean such a punching bag? I think he's a punching bag because he's very threatening to the establishment. 303-382-1150, Steve, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Welcome back, Enid.
Thank you, Steve.
I hope you had a good trip to Venice.
I had a wonderful trip. It was great.
I think the last 2 weeks is the best thing that could happen to you guys. Kerry, I think, is a far better candidate than Howard Dean ever would have been. I actually think a strong ticket, I know you just mentioned Edwards a minute ago. I think Edwards is still a little too young. You know, he's a first-term senator.
Maybe he could be like, he's a little Dan Quayle-ish. Maybe he could be like a vice president.
Well, I think a Kerry-Edwards ticket would be a strong ticket. I still think Bush is going to beat him, but...
What about a Kerry-Dean ticket?
No, I think Howard Dean is bad news. You know what? Howard Dean appeals
Why do you say that?
Because Howard Dean appeals to the part of the party that is super angry right now. And those voters are not going to carry he's not going to get moderate votes. I think Edwards brings a couple of things to the table that you want. He's very charismatic. You know, he's got the boyish good looks. I don't think he has the experience, but he brings a couple of things that I think you really need. Kerry obviously has the experience, although I think if he ends up getting the nomination, it's going to kind of hurt him because he's got a 19-year voting record, and I've already seen some pretty good inconsistencies that I know he's going to get hit up on pretty hard. But I think it's the best thing that could happen to you guys. You guys did not want Howard Dean as the nominee. He had no chance against Bush. And I think that this was going to make for a far more interesting race.
Well, maybe you're right about that. I talked to a friend yesterday, and she feels like Kerry's wildly liberal. And I said, give me a specific example, and she couldn't do it. I mean, we didn't dwell on it. Maybe she would have fished something up.
Well,
but that's the rap he's got. The truth of the matter was he was fiscally conservative. Some of his anger does bother me a little bit because I'm wondering if I see the gravitas in between. And by the way, Kerry is getting slammed today. Guess what he's getting slammed for? Before and after shots that maybe he had some kind of work done on his face because he had a lot of wrinkles on the before and fewer wrinkles on the after.
Yeah, I heard that.
I don't know.
It's
like a guy getting a pec implant. I mean, would you ever to treat him seriously? But you know, this is the lengths people have to go to now to get the vote.
Yeah, but you know what, Enid? The reason why that happens is because people care. You know, people would say, you know what, I don't care if John Kerry had a facelift. I care about his politics. Then, you know, a couple of times you would have stupid stories like that come out, and when nobody paid attention to it, the media would stop doing it. But the fact is people want to hear that kind of stuff. And, you know, I mean, if you look back to in 96 when Bill Clinton beat Dole and they talked about the soccer moms, well, who cares if they're soccer moms? You know, what's the politics here?
Well, no,
I
agree with you. It shouldn't make a difference. But and I don't even know if the story's true. They just were showing before and after. Now, when your face is actively you're engaged in talking to somebody, then your wrinkles show more, and when your face is at rest and your mouth is closed, your wrinkles may show less. So I don't know if it actually happened or if they're just doctoring some shots. But Steve, thanks very much, and thanks for the good point. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
How Denver and Colorado spell great talk radio. KNRC.
I own a chain of spas. We offer mud baths, hydrotherapy, everything to de-stress our clients. So if we run into a cash flow problem, the last thing we want is to start stressing out ourselves.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of Open, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It's very calming.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
It's great to be camping, Raymond, and such a beautiful night. I love nature.
Except when it stops.
You're constipated?
Marie.
Here, try Phillips Chocolate Cream Chews.
They taste great.
Unlike many overnight laxatives, Phillips Chocolate Cream Chews are stimulant-free. They work more naturally with your body for comfortable, cramp-free relief. Feeling better this morning, Raymond?
You better believe it.
Phillips, comfortable, cramp-free relief.
So you've tried every diet out there. Well, that's something considering there's over 17,000 diets on the market to choose from. Low-carb diets, low-fat diets, high-protein diets. If you're one of the 127 million overweight Americans, you've probably tried one or all of these diets, but without lasting success. That's where Monarch Health Sciences can get you fit for life with a new and complete solution to overall health. The Monarch Forever Fit program is based on solid science in the fields of nutrition, exercise, physiology, and psychology. No magic pills here. The program was created by some of the world's leading experts in weight management, world-renowned doctors, Olympic athletes, exercise physiologists, and psychologists. Join this winning team. Call now, 720-981-4622. Whether it's to lose weight or become part of the Monarch Health Sciences business, call 720-981-4622 for your free Forever Fit information kit. That number again is 720-981-4622 or www.monarchhs.com/foreverfit.
AM 1150 KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC. Listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
1227 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and as I said, late in the broadcast, who are we going to be joined by? But Abigail, John and Abigail Adams. I mean, we thought they'd been dead for quite a long time, but no, they're going to be here in full drag, in full John and Abigail Adams regalia. And they do a show that they bring around to different, they're bringing to Denver. And they do it through Chautauqua, and they are America's first true political couple. And I thought it would be fun to have them on as historical information. So let's see what happens. That's later in the broadcast. Also, just to give you a heads up, we've got some fabulous guests coming tomorrow. Stanley Greenberg, he was Bill Clinton's pollster. He has written a book called The Two Americas, Our Current Political Deadlock and How to Break It. Here we are, evenly split, the reds and the blues. So I'm very interested to hear what he has to say. And Friday, I put this down on your calendar. This should be worth listening to. Kevin Phillips, former Republican strategist, somebody the Republicans always looked up to. He has written a book very critical of the Bushes called American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Next week, James Fallows, who's written an incredible piece in the Atlantic Monthly called Blind into Baghdad, and David Denby, who is the movie critic for The New Yorker, American Sucker. He thought he was going through a nasty divorce. He thought he could get rich enough in the internet bubble to be able to buy his wife's half out of their apartment in New York. And guess what? He lost it all and more. 303-382-1150. We're talking about what happened in New Hampshire yesterday. Kerry scored big. Howard Dean is spinning it as a solid second. Eric says, one of our listeners emailing me, this is how liberal Kerry is. He voted for the Iraq resolution, voted for the no school districts left behind, voted for Bush's tax cuts, voted for the Patriot Act. That's what Kerry has done. 303-382-1150. Tell me what you think about the candidates in the post-New Hampshire primary. Does anybody have a chance against George W. Bush? The fact that Dr. K has resigned, no weapons of mass destruction, the fact that there are really some political problems now brewing for President Bush, is any of that going to make a difference? Is it going to weaken him? I know it's kind of hard to look into the tea leaves because lots can happen between now and next November, but if you have a take on this, the board is just about filled up. I think there's one line open, 303-382-1150. Kevin, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I think it's funny, your last caller, Steve, I think he was a Republican because he was talking about us guys, and I find it funny how they think that we have to have a candidate that they approve of before we go any farther.
Well, they think that, I think what he was trying to say is that he thinks maybe Kerry could do more for Democrats than Dean can.
No, I doubt it. But, you know, Enid, I have a challenge for you.
Yeah.
I'm calling you to action now. You can take my information off air if you'd like, and I don't know if you even want to do this, but this is my idea, and I sincerely think it's a good idea, and I think you might even agree with it.
Let's hear it.
You could use your show to further this notion.
Okay.
Well, I think now is the time, based on what we've seen in Iowa and New Hampshire, based on what we're likely to see in the upcoming seven states, I think as a tactical strategy, now, today, if not tomorrow, would be the time for Clark to join the Dean campaign. I know there's been a lot of talk where Clark's saying, oh, they offered it to me, but I don't want it. But, you know, that's all politics, and anything goes. Anything's possible.
Well, everybody's rejecting it. Edwards is rejecting, no, I'm not going to be. Everybody wants to say, look, I'm not your lost leader here. I'm not going to be the secondary person. I'm in it to be number one.
But these are reasonable people, and they know what's going on. And we're watching this, and I think we can tell what's going on. And I don't think that Clark has a chance by himself.
No, I don't think he does.
I'd like to believe that Dean does, but I'm concerned very much. I'm a hardcore Dean supporter. I'm not going to switch. I'm going to vote for whoever the Democratic candidate is. But if it's Kerry, it's going to be a drag. And I think that we need to start a grassroots movement calling for Clark to join the Dean campaign, for Dean to make whatever concessions he has.
All right, let me play devil's advocate here.
Okay.
First of all, I think there's a whole other procedure that goes on to determine the the vice presidential candidate.
Well, but there is.
But secondly, let me say this. For some reason, Dean makes mainstream voters, status quo voters, the conventional wisdom voter, very nervous, even though in Vermont, he was fiscally conservative. For some reason, the media, it's like what they did with Al Gore. They said that he said he invented the Internet. He could never shake that. And it turned out not to be true. They have painted Dean as a wild-eyed, angry man, way too out there, way too liberal.
Right.
Wife's a hippie. He's a hippie.
Right.
Ba-da, 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 ba-da. And a lot of that has stuck with a lot of Democratic moderate voters who tend
right.
to be on the conservative side, actually. And I don't know if that's going to make him, therefore, the most viable of candidates, but he's the only one who had the courage to get out there and say this war was crap, it was lies, it was sold to us on lies, and nobody else has had the courage to do it. So he's been out there as the firebrand, and who will benefit from it is John Kerry, it looks like.
Well, I agree. But see, Wesley Clark can help temper that notion in people's mind, because Wesley Clark, after all, is the Republican dressed as a Democrat, and he can appeal to those mainstream voters. In fact, if you saw that Dixville Gulch return, it was all Clark up there in that little Republican stronghold. Now, I would say that you might want to put out the call and see if other Clark supporters, have them call you and see if they'd get behind that idea.
All right, let's. It's an interesting
change of the nature of the race and to unite, because the Clark ideology and the Dean ideology are very similar in their anger and frustration with the powers that be and the need to right wrongs, whereas Kerry is just going to go in there and do what politicians do. And
well, Kerry has been criticized, but he was criticized by David Brooks, a conservative, as coming out with these great stirring speeches trying to right the wrongs of society, and then he doesn't do anything after that. So,
he's
Kevin,
a compromiser.
Well, and Lieberman is the worst compromiser. Lieberman is way too inside the beltway for my taste. So,
I think we need to get together and take this fight to them.
All right. Well, let's see what happens. We'll float your idea, Kevin, and I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. Terry in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Terry.
Listen, I've got to disagree with your last caller. I think it's over for Clark, and I think it's over for Howard Dean.
I'm not sure it's over for Howard Dean. What if he could he be a vice? I don't see him taking the number two spot. I don't see his ego allowing him to take the number two slot.
No, I think it's going to have to be Kerry and John Edwards. And I like both of them. I'm a supporter of John Kerry. I have been all along. I actually have had respect for him for the last 20 years. I followed his career. And the thing is, he does have great ideas. And the thing is, I mean, I've seen so many speeches lately in the last 3 weeks, and John Kerry is not, he's not Bill Clinton. He's not anybody. He's his own man. He's a hero. And I think he can bring the Democratic Party together, and I think he can beat George W. Bush. After all, John Kerry's got a record. George Bush had no record. I mean, he was a governor in a weak state, a weak governor in a state where the legislature pretty much controls the thing. George Bush has no record. And the record he has is just...
Yeah, but you try to convince people who are voting with their guts and not with their brains and see how far you get with that. But, Terry, I thank you for the call, 303-382-1150. Lisa Onassell, hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi there. I have just relocated from South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And we had, first-hand experience of watching George Bush do his dirty tricks on John McCain down there. And I say never underestimate the South, because I think that John Edwards has at least as much experience as George Bush had when he became...
Oh, more experience. He's been a senator, and he's been a very successful man in his life coming from nowhere. George Bush was a flop until he was 40 and an alcoholic.
I completely agree. So I think that John Edwards is going to hear the call to South, and I think there's going to be some warmth coming up.
Well, let me give
for him.
Lisa, let me give you a heads up. As I was coming into the studio today, I'm listening to CNN, and guess what's being reported? That the Pentagon, there's going to be a big push to get Osama bin Laden in the spring. So they're going to haul him out, just like they did. They hauled out Saddam Hussein from that hole where apparently the Kurds had put him, leaving him for the Americans to find drugged. They're going to haul him out for that big bounce right before the election. I really can see it coming.
Well, you know...
And I wouldn't put it past him either.
Well, I wouldn't either. And I really believe that even though George Bush won hands down South Carolina last time out, he has gone against the textile industry so much, and so much against the average working guy, and that's what South Carolina is, that this is not going to be the year George Bush wins the South.
I really hope you're right about that, Lisa. I thank you for the call, 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 12:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 53 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. Aurora police continue to investigate an incident yesterday in which one man was shot and another kidnapped. Last night, detectives caught a break when they found the vehicle, which belongs to the shooting victim. Authorities continue to look for the suspect's vehicle. It's a 1992 Ford SUV with Colorado license plate 013JAR. A judge in Lamar has ruled that a woman accused of drowning her two children is competent to stand trial. Authorities say Rebecca Amaya previously admitted she drowned her five-month-old son and four-year-old daughter in a bathtub. Her attorney says they'll most likely use an insanity defense at trial. An audit shows that local governments misspent more than $1 million worth of grants from the Colorado Conservation Trust Fund in 2002. The cash comes from state lottery profits and is supposed to pay only for parks, recreation, and open space. However, it's been used for things such as a minor league baseball team, tax refunds, and even internet gambling. In sports, the Denver Nuggets play host to the Chicago Bulls tonight at the Pepsi Center. In November, when they last met, the Nuggets beat the Bulls. A Waterway car wash is your best weapon for fighting winter salt, slush, and grime. Make the Waterway Winter Protection Package your first line of defense. Visit today. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:38.
Hi, this is Doug Kelly. Joining me now is Brenda at Golden Triangle Wines and Spirits. Brenda, I thought this time we would play a little food and wine association.
Okay, Doug, I'm game.
All right, I'll give you the food. You tell me the great wine to go with it, okay? How about duck breast?
Let's do a Spanish pirato. How about ambrosia?
Sounds good. How about sea scallops wrapped in bacon?
Crisp Pinot Grigio, nice and crisp and refreshing.
Bratwurst.
Bratwurst? Well, that's not a wine. Oh, you got to do beer with bratwurst. How about Utenos, Lithuanian beer, or... better yet, flag porter. Yummy.
Lamb chops.
California's in Zinfandel. Dash California Zinfandel would be perfect with lamb chops.
Now, one everybody would want to know about pizza.
Oh, lots of options for pizza. You could do a Primitivo. You could do a Sangiovese out of Tuscany, Italy.
I bet you've got one for sushi, too, don't you?
Champagne or sparkling wine. It's a great pair.
I knew you'd have the answer. Golden Triangle Wines and Spirits, located 12th and Broadway.
Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, where variety, pricing, and convenience intersect at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Call 303-893-8437.
KNRC News Time is 12:39. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the International Star Registry. Colorado and Colfax, we had an accident in the cleanup stages, as well as southbound I-25 at Colorado, injury accident there. When Broadway, right at 9th, watch for an accident that's going to be blocking up at least one lane of traffic. This Valentine's Day, give your sweetheart an amazing gift that will be remembered forever. Name a star after them. Call International Star Registry at 800-282-3333. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We'll experience some falling temperatures through the afternoon, from the upper 40s to near 50, back into the low 40s and upper 30s. Canadian cold front pressing down on us, but skies will stay mainly clear, and it'll be fair tonight. We'll drop down to a low around 26, another sunny day tomorrow with a high of 54, mostly sunny and low 50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 53 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1241. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Computers talk in a strange language to us. Then again, so do computer techies. It's hard to find someone who will understand your computer needs. That's why when you're looking for solutions to your computer problems, you're looking for DataTarget.com. At DataTarget.com, you'll find people who target your computer needs in plain English. They'll cater to your problems relating to Microsoft Windows, installation upgrades, email, networking, internet, security, whether it's a business need or personal. You'll find DataTarget.com makes the problem easy to solve. DataTarget.com will be there at your business or home to help rid the frustration of trying to resolve it by yourself or spending hours on the phone with a tech guy who can't even talk. DataTarget.com is affordable, and best of all, your first consultation is absolutely free. DataTarget.com. Call 877-856-1206. That's 877-856-1206. Or log on to www.datatarget.com.
KNRC Market Watch.
As predicted, no change. The Federal Reserve Open Market Committee leaving interest rates alone at the multi-decade low of 1%. In its so-called bias statement, or outlook on the nation's economy, the Fed says, in effect, the risk of deflation has decreased, now roughly equal with the risk of inflation. And the committee says it can maintain its current policy on rates. Analysts had predicted, because all this was expected, markets would have little reaction. Following a slight dip, averages are back not far from where they were before the announcement. The Dow is up 10 points. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are each up about 1.5. Advancers are edging out decliners on the big board, where trading volume is heavy. Just over a billion shares have changed hands. The mild gains come on the heels of two earnings reports from blue chips, Philip Morris parent Altria matching earnings expectations, and Procter & Gamble beating expectations. Again, no change on interest rates from the Federal Reserve. I'm Andrew O'Day in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1243 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. President John Adams and his wife Abigail will be joining us later in the broadcast in the 2 o'clock hour. You thought they were dead, didn't you? But they're not. And they're going to be here in full drag, and we're going to be talking to them. So that's happening. They're part of the American Spirit Series. It's an evening with John and Abigail Adams, America's first true political couple. And it's going to be tomorrow night, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Trinity United Methodist Church, 18th and Broadway in downtown Denver. So I thought it'd be fun to have them on and find out what John and Abigail Adams are about and what they talk about and all the letters that they've exchanged with each other, lessons that maybe we should pay attention to now at this time in our country's history. Talking about the primary and last night and Kerry winning, and what do you think about it? What does this mean for Dean? Is this, he says now, he's quoted as saying, to Spinity, saying, you know, I came in a solid second. There definitely is a bounce from Iowa, from the caucuses. One of the big contributors to the Republican Party, guess who? Dean Singleton, who owns the Denver Post. Everybody calls the Denver Post a liberal publication, but Dean Singleton has been a contributor, I think. Let's see. Maybe I don't have this right. Let me be sure I have this right. The Hearsts have given money to Joe Lieberman for president. The Murdoch family has given money to the Bush-Cheney campaign. They've also sent money for John McCain's reelection effort and Republican Congressman Bill Thomas. Mort Zuckerman, the publisher of the New York Daily News, has given money to Democratic Congressman Tom Lantos. Dean Singleton, vice chairman of the Media News Group, who also serves as publisher of his flagship, the Denver Post, gave a $2,000 contribution to Bush-Cheney as well. So a lot of Bush-Cheney contributions. 303-382-1150, Van, calling from Boulder. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, welcome back, Enid.
Thanks, Van.
Yeah, hope you had a good time over there.
Oh, I had a wonderful time.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that in the New Hampshire primary, Pitt Bush only got 86% of the vote.
Then who got only 86% of the vote?
Bush did in the Republican primary.
Okay.
And Dean and Kerry got 10% of the Republican primary vote.
Okay.
I think that's hilarious. That was like 1,200, 1,300 votes.
Well, what is typically the Republican, what in the past, what has the Republican done?
Well,
maybe he's done typically.
Democrats don't even register. You know, I mean, they don't even have any percentage. So the fact that you've got, in New Hampshire, 10% of the Republicans irritated enough to take the time to write in John Kerry or Howard Dean, to me, is hilarious.
Well, I had sort of overlooked that aspect of it. But
yeah, so not only did we have record turnout for Democrats, you know, so we've got a really engaged, pumped-up group of Democrats voting.
By how much larger a turnout than typically?
Well, I mean, Iowa was, what, over double.
Right, but what was New Hampshire?
I don't think it was quite double, but I think it was close.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know that for sure. I know that Iowa was double in terms of the turnout for the caucuses.
So this means that the Democrats are enraged. They're getting activated. They want to see somebody who can really beat Bush.
They're getting busy.
But I want to say something here. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday who was in favor of the war,
mm-hmm.
much to my amazement and chagrin. And now that no weapons of mass destruction are going to be found, we've pretty much agreed, at least not in our lifetimes, I don't think, people are shifting their reasons for having been in favor of the war because they don't want to look like they've got egg on their face. Well, they're saying, well, you know what? Saddam was really a bad guy.
Yeah. You know,
I don't know if anybody's willing to say, you know, this was a bad idea. This was a terrible idea. And had the White House been honest with Americans and said, we're going in there and we're going to be in there for a long time and it's going to cost zillions of dollars for us to be in there and we don't know when we're going to get out of there. And we're there to reshape the region and get the oil and do a few other things and try to make it a better place for us in the Middle East. I don't think Americans would have gone for it because it wasn't number one on a priority list. They had to politicize the intelligence that supported the fact that he could pose a threat and it could come to the United States within 45 minutes. He could deploy a missile, which is hilarious because he's got something that can't even get to Israel, so let alone get to the East Coast.
I completely agree with
you. But I'm going to tell you who's going to take the hit on this. The hit is going to be taken by the intelligence community that was forced to politicize its information.
Right. But you know why they haven't taken the hit already, Enid? The only reason that I can figure, and you know, I know some people will call me a conspiracy theorist, but the only reason I think you still have the guy that's running the FBI and you still have Tenet running the CIA is that they have those boys in the White House by the short hairs. And there is something that is keeping those folks employed. And it's got to be damaging enough. Otherwise, they would have been sacrificed already.
Maybe so. A Tenet has managed to alienate his own people by trying to walk that line between not not being unsupportive to his own people and doing what the White House wants him to do, and he's going to be the sacrificial lamb here. And the whole intelligence community, when they have been forced to politicize, to cherry-pick unanalyzed intelligence information to make the case for going to war, and now that we see that it's all fallen apart, that there was no real reason to go to war, it wasn't, shouldn't have been on the top burner, and you can argue, as the intelligence community does argue, that in fact it has made us weaker. It has distracted us from really going after the terrorists that we ought to go after. But people in America, people who were in favor of the war, who thought that Bush made them feel more secure, don't want to admit that they were suckered into it.
One of my good buddies that I spend a lot of time working out with just got out of the Marines in the spring. He was, you know, in the Marines for 5 years. Spent, you know, I think a little over a year in Afghanistan.
Tell me quick, Van.
Okay, and I tell you, he is going to vote against Bush because he feels like all the troops that they needed over there to finish the job in Afghanistan got yanked.
Do you remember that they were going to be in and out in 30 days, 44 days, and now we're there and we are stuck. I thank you for the call. 303-321-1150. Guess what? Here it is. More than 208,000 Democratic ballots were cast in New Hampshire, shattering the mark of 170,000 set in 1992 when Paul Tsongas beat Bill Clinton. So he beat Bill Clinton, but he still wasn't the candidate. Overall turnout did not set a record because the Republican primary was essentially uncontested. The Secretary of State in New Hampshire had predicted that 184,000 votes in the Democratic primary, about one-third of them independents. Independents may vote in either primary. The turnout was excellent. The independents are coming out to vote. New registrations are high, heavier than usual, especially with the frigid weather. So there you go. I hope this augurs well. 303-382-1150. What is going to happen to Dean now? Is he toast? Is he on his way to being toast? Can he be the comeback kid? Can he ignite himself? Did Kerry actually have a facelift? Inquiring minds have to know these things. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
One of America's greatest cities finally has a great talk radio station. AM 1150 KNRC.
Does your accounting firm really know you, your business, and your goals? At Earhart, Keefe, Steiner & Huttman, we spend time with you to learn about your business and your goals. As Denver's largest locally owned accounting firm, EKS&H has been serving companies for over 25 years. The roots of the success of EKS&H are built on a corporate culture where service is our priority. If you're looking for an accounting firm that is progressive and will really spend time with you, there's only one name that should come to mind, EKS&H. At Earhart, Keith, Steiner, and Hotman, we'll support you with integrity to help your business flourish. Call us at 303-740-9400. That's 303-740-9400. Or visit us on the web at EKSH.com. EKSH, Certified Public Accountants and Advisors. Trust that is earned.
My company designs and builds offices for large corporations. After 10 years in business, I can handle just about any construction problem. But paying my bills on time, that's not always so easy.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It helps me build my business.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Are drugs affecting you, your family, or a friend? Narcanon provides answers to drug addiction. They offer free assessment and referral services to over 11,000 treatment centers nationwide. For 30 years, Narcanon has successfully used a drug-free approach to long-term recovery that works. They understand the cravings, guilt, and depression associated with addiction. To find out more about Narcanon, log on to www.stopaddiction.com or call 1-800-468-6933.
For a limited time at participating Taco Bell locations, savor the three real cheeses you'll find in the new Cheesy Bean and Rice Burrito. It's tasty and filling. When you want quality, think outside the bun.
Tune in Saturday morning from 10 a.m. till noon for Style Matters, sponsored locally by Aspen Grove, where life meets style. Style Matters is a weekly discussion of the Denver lifestyle as it relates to fashion and style. Hosted by Judy Schwartz and Evelyn Ehrman of the Style Matters column of the Rocky Mountain News, you'll hear lively discussion regarding fashion, style, local shopping, and more. That's Style Matters, Saturday morning from 10 till noon on 1150 KNRC. Sponsored by Aspen Grove, shopping Colorado style.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
12:54 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. And just to give you a Greg Dobbs update, he was in the hospital. A lot of you are calling and emailing and so on. So in case you have missed the news, he had emergency abdominal surgery. He was in the hospital for a while before they were able to solve the problem. He is home now, which is good news. It's a slow recovery, but he's definitely moving in the right direction and on the mend. So that's the latest on Greg Dobbs, an update, and we are wishing him well. And it's always not so much fun to heal from surgery, but the news is good. So just to give you an update on Greg Dobbs, 303-382-1150. We're talking about the primaries yesterday. We're talking about the New Hampshire primary, Kerry winning big. Is he the one that I think more mainstream Democrats are most comfortable with? Is he the one who can beat Bush? What does this mean for Dean? Could you envision a Kerry Dean ticket? I don't think it could happen, but who knows? Max on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I think Kerry only got 5 more delegates than Dean, didn't he?
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to the delegate count.
Yeah, so there are 26 delegates available, and Kerry got 12 and Dean got 9.
Okay.
And so he's not really that far behind if you're counting delegates.
If you're counting delegates, but if you're counting the popular vote, how much of this is a harbinger for what's going to happen in November is the question. What is the correlation here? We don't know.
Dean might have some momentum now, and he might have a little bit of a lead, but he can blow it, especially with the spotlight on him. I mean, he can get clumsy, I think.
You mean Kerry?
Oh, Kerry, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
well, look at Dean. Dean was like a house of fire, and then his candle has sort of eclipsed right now. And now you've got Kerry, who's on fire, and we don't know how long the fire is going to last, depending on what the opposition research digs up on him, how much they can smear him, how much of it will stick, how well he does, whether they make smart decisions or dumb ones.
Dean is really reinventing campaigning. I mean, he's so well organized. It's unreal. I mean, I've been following it closely. And Enid, if I could just make one more point too, I talking about the WMDs and Bush administration and unilateralism, I know what it means to be conservative. And what Bush did, going to war over this, was not conservative at all. You know, I mean, I don't think Bush is really.
Were you in favor?
Were you a conservative person?
No. Were you in favor of the war to begin with?
No. I thought diplomacy could have solved it. And as a matter of fact, I think diplomacy could have saved us a lot of money as a country. And in my mind, that is a more conservative route to take.
I think you're absolutely right about that, and I am absolutely in agreement with you, Max. 303-382-1150, Patty on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Patty.
I'm really concerned that the GOP is setting up the Democrats to fail. I mean, you've got pictures of Kerry with Jane Fonda in the 70s. I mean, how's that going to go over there? You're going to absolutely...
Give me a break. It's 34 years ago.
They don't care. People won't care. The moderates and independents, they'll see that, and they'll just... There's a lot of bad feelings about things like that.
Kerry was a genuine war hero.
Yes,
which
was.
Is more than you can say for George W. Bush, who barely showed up.
I don't like Bush. I hate Bush. I want to get rid of Bush. That's why I'm upset about this, because I think they're setting us up. I mean, all of a sudden they're propping up Edwards in all the news, and he was a trial lawyer. You know, how's that going to go over?
Well, we'll see what happens, Patty. It's an interesting thought, and I thank you for sharing it. 303-382-1150. Here's the Borowitz Report. Lord of the Rings wins a Democratic nomination. Party chooses movie blockbuster over John Kerry. The Democratic Party ignored the triumph of Senator John Kerry in the New Hampshire primary last night and instead handed the Democratic nomination for president to the movie blockbuster The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. The Democratic nomination brings the film's total number of nominations to 12. In naming the hugely profitable Rings sequel as its nominee, the Democratic Party broke with a long-standing tradition of nominating a human being to head its ticket, with the exception of the year 2000 when it nominated Al Gore. Peter Jackson, the director of the Ring series, said he was flabbergasted by the Democrats' decision to have his latest film square off against President Bush in the fall election. This is a very flattering comment on our movie, Jackson told reporters. Either that or they think Kerry's a stiff. Well, that's the trouble with Kerry. He and a tree, you couldn't tell which was Kerry and which was the tree. And that was probably part of the reason why Dean, who had all this passion and was willing to get out there, maybe he was the first wave of galvanizing Democratic response to the present regime in Washington, and maybe Kerry takes the torch and runs from there. I don't know. It's just a thought. More as we continue, I want to talk about the possibility of executing juveniles. Are you in favor of that? We'll talk about that in the next hour. Two more hours of Enid coming up right here on AM 1150. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. You can join the conversation 303-382-1150.
Sides Talk, AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 52 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the network of 17 John Elway AutoNation showrooms. Aurora police are still putting clues together in yesterday's incident in which one man was shot and wounded and another one was kidnapped. Yesterday afternoon, five men went to a home in the 800 block of Oswego near Del Mar Park to purchase one of the residents' pickup trucks. One of the five pistol-whipped and shot the truck's owner. He's in the hospital recovering from a gunshot wound to the groin. The suspects then kidnapped 19-year-old Jose Palma Lujan, the shooting victim's brother. Detectives last night got a break when they found the victim's truck, as we hear from Kathleen Walsh, the Aurora PD spokeswoman.
Denver police found the truck unoccupied at 27th and Stored. So Aurora police did have the truck transported to our impound lot where it does await processing.
Police are still hunting for the suspect's getaway car, which was identified as a 1992 Ford SUV with Colorado license plate 013JAR. A new audit shows local governments misspent more than $1 million worth of grants from the Colorado Conservation Trust Fund in 2002. The cash comes from state lottery profits, and the law says it's supposed to pay for parks, recreation, and open space only. In Haswell, one town employee was able to spend $1,500 of the money on internet gambling. Castle Rock used some of that money for a tax refund. Pueblo put $20,000 into a minor league baseball team that eventually folded. Auditors also found more than $500,000 in questionable spending and said 10 communities failed to file adequate reports. Current law is unclear, so there won't be any prosecutions, but Boulder Democratic Senator Ron Tupa is sponsoring a bill that would require lottery managers to sign off on every expenditure from the trust fund. A Lamar judge has ruled that a woman accused of drowning her two children is competent enough to stand trial. Authorities say Rebecca Amaya previously had admitted that she had drowned her 5-month-old son and 4-year-old daughter in a bathtub. Criminal defense attorney Kevin Donovan says an insanity defense will likely be used when Amaya goes to trial. El Paso County Assistant District Attorney Dan May says the defense will have to prove that Amaya didn't know right from wrong on the day of the alleged crime.
So you can be found competent or incompetent now just based on how you are today. Doesn't necessarily tell us how you were on the day of the crime. And that's what they'll look at the trial. On the day of the crime, was she insane or not?
Amaya faces two counts of first-degree murder. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for March. Outgoing Chief U.S. Weapons Inspector David Kaye says that pre-war assumptions about stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were incorrect.
It turns out we were all wrong, probably, in my judgment, and that is most disturbing.
Dr. Kaye is testifying before a Senate committee today. He spent several months leading a team searching for weapons of mass destruction inside Iraq. WMD were the principal rationale for the U.S.-led war against Iraq. Kaye is challenging pre-war intelligence on that country. With the New Hampshire primary behind them, the Democratic presidential hopefuls are setting their sights on upcoming election tests. Senator John Edwards has taken his campaign to South Carolina ahead of next Tuesday's primary there. Senator Joseph Lieberman is in Oklahoma with supporters there. Political strategist and University of Virginia professor Larry Sabato says that one of the most popular Democrats is set to endorse presidential hopeful John Kerry.
Kerry, as I understand it, might well be endorsed by Senator Gene Carnahan, former Senator Carnahan, probably the most popular Democrat in Missouri very soon. So I think he's got a good shot there. He's got a good shot in some other states.
Sabato predicts that Senator Kerry will sweep every state. He adds that Kerry will most likely take Missouri since the state's favorite Congressman Dick Gephardt dropped out of the race after a major defeat in Iowa. Interest rates will remain the same. That's the decision announced today by the Federal Open Market Committee after a two-day meeting on Capitol Hill. The Fed's trend-setting federal funds rate is currently at 1%. That's a 45-year low. Stocks fell after the Federal Reserve hinted it's closer to an interest rate hike. The Dow is down more than 82 points at this hour, the NASDAQ down more than 18, and the S&P 500 down just over 6.5. In sports, it's the Denver Nuggets versus the Chicago Bulls tonight at the Pepsi Center. Nuggets beat the Bulls in November, the last time the two teams played each other. Colorado Avalanche have tonight off as they get ready to hit the road to California. Tomorrow night, they'll be in L.A. to play the Kings. The next night, they head to Anaheim to take on the Mighty Ducks. College basketball action tonight. CU Buffs have a home game against the Missouri Tigers. John Elway is going to the payoffs. They'll help pay off your current vehicle and get you into a new 2004. Same low, no haggle prices, same price match, plus a money-back guarantee. John Elway, honest. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
All right, then. The first thing we'll do is divide everyone into two groups. Those of you who travel less than once a month, please turn your volume dial counterclockwise. And might I advise you to get out more? You deserve it. The rest of you, esteemed airline pilots, flight attendants, millionaires, professional athletes, congrats, you've made the cut. And should concurrently visit locatingme.com, where you'll find a service designed to aid you and your family in an emergency. When you're away, you want your family to feel confident that they could contact you at any time. And further, that they have access to pertinent medical information from any computer in the world. LocatingMe.com does this and more. And because you're a special and unique individual, if you're not completely satisfied, return your ID cards within 30 days and your entire subscription price will be refunded. No obligation. This concludes our discussion. And homebodies, you may readjust the volume as you see fit.
Visit LocatingMe.com, where you'll never be out of touch.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to check the roads with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by James Hardy Building. Clearing the accident, Colorado and Colfax, as well as Broadway and 9th. Everything else is construction-related. U.S. 85 southbound right at Titan Road. Watch for that, as well as Federal in either direction at 64th. Visit McKay Landing in Broomfield for homes carefully crafted with durable, low-maintenance James Hardy siding products by James Company. For more information, call 303-466-6560. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We'll experience some falling temperatures through the afternoon from the upper 40s to near 50, back into the low 40s and upper 30s. Canadian cold front pressing down on us, but skies will stay mainly clear, and it'll be fair tonight. We'll drop down to a low around 26, another sunny day tomorrow with a high of 54, mostly sunny and low 50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under mostly sunny skies, it's 52 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 135 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And if you're just tuning in, we are going to be joined by people that you thought were long dead in the next hour. President John Adams and his wife Abigail Adams in full Adams drag. They are presenting an evening with John and Abigail Adams, and I'll give you more information about that at Trinity Church here in Denver and at 18th and Broadway, I think is the right address. We're going to have some great guests on the rest of the week as well. Stanley Greenberg tomorrow, who is Bill Clinton's major pollster, has written a book about why the America is so divided and what we can do about it. Kevin Phillips on Friday, put that down on your calendar. He is very interesting, and he has written a book. He's a Republican. He's a Republican strategist, very well respected, and he has written a book all about the Bush family deceit. James Fallow on Monday, written a piece, Blind into Baghdad, in the Atlantic Monthly. So we've got some very good guests lined up and more as we will continue. We've been talking in the last hour about the New Hampshire primary, what this means for Dean, what it means for Kerry, a little bit of information, side information. In the last 30 years, only one candidate, Edward Muskie, who won both the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, failed to win his party's nomination. But winning the nomination obviously does not guarantee success in November. So in the last 30 years, only one candidate, Edmund Muskie, won both the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary and failed to win his party's nomination. It is a new ballgame, though, but it does certainly give a huge boost to John Kerry. And it's also being reported that regardless of place, Howard Dean's machine is still setting the pace. I've often asked this question. Somebody can run a campaign, but can they run the country? But being so well organized and being the CEO of an organization that worked so well that it made innovative use of the Internet, it made innovative use of fundraising techniques, is certainly a feather in the hat of any CEO, so I think it speaks well of Howard Dean. Any observations you want to make about the outcome of the New Hampshire primary last night? What this means for Kerry, what this means for Dean, who's your person who you think has the best chance of winning? 303-382-1150. What I want to talk about right now, I want to add this to the conversation. The Supreme Court is going to decide whether the Constitution prohibits the death penalty for crimes committed at the age of 16 or 17. So what we're talking about here are juvenile executions. With capital punishment for juvenile offenders falling rapidly into disuse across most of the country, only two such death sentences were imposed last year, and jurors in Virginia rejected the death penalty for Lee Malvo, remember the teenage sniper who was convicted of murder. Justices, Supreme Court justices will consider whether there is now a national consensus of the sort that the court discerned 2 years ago when it prohibited the execution of mentally retarded defendants. The outcome is uncertain. Opponents of the death penalty have pressed the court for several years to reconsider a 1989 decision that upheld capital punishment for older teenagers. A decision in 1988 struck down the death penalty for those aged 15 and younger. Four justices, the ones that Pat Robertson is praying will drop dead, John Paul Stevens, David Souter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, have made clear their opposition to the death penalty for 16 to 17-year-olds, calling it inconsistent with evolving standards of decency in a civilized society. Despite that strong language, the four conspicuously did not manage to attract a fifth vote for their position then, and it is far from certain that a fifth vote exists today. In fact, the impetus to take up the issue this time may well have come from the court's more conservative members responding to an appeal filed by the state of Missouri from a ruling by the Missouri Supreme Court that overturned the death sentence of a man who killed at the age of 17. The defendant, who is now 27, was convicted in 1993 of murdering a woman who recognized him when he broke into her house with a 15-year-old companion to commit a burglary. A majority of the Missouri Supreme Court its 4-3 decision relied heavily on the U.S. Supreme Court's analysis in the mental retardation cases for the conclusion that the execution of those who were younger than 18 when they committed their crimes has become so rare as to be cruel and unusual punishment prohibited by the Eighth Amendment. Only three states, Texas, Virginia, and Oklahoma, had executed juvenile offenders in the past 10 years, according to the state court. So, if you are not allowed, we don't think you're smart enough to make an informed decision, and that is to vote until you're 18 years old. The question is, should you be executed if you commit a crime and you're 16 or 17 years old? That is the question. 303-382-1150. If you are 16 or 17 years old, you're a juvenile, should you and you're presumably not mentally retarded, although here you are in the testosterone zone in those years, Should you be executed for committing a horrible crime, a capital crime? You're 16 or you're 17 years old. I'm going to tell you how I come down on this. If you're not old enough, if we don't think you're smart enough to vote at 18, then I don't think you're held responsible when you're 16 or 17 years old. And moreover, if you're only 16 or 17 years old and you're doing horrible things, we probably ought to execute your parents. And as you know, I'm not in favor of the death penalty. I think it's too good for people. I think it's morally reprehensible. I think this is not what a civilized society should do. However heinous the crime is, you put people in jail for the rest of their lives and you let them slug it out in jail. I think jail could be worse than being executed, where I'm always amazed that they, before they administer the lethal injection, they like to give you that last meal, which usually is surf and turf, which usually is filled with cholesterol, and then they like to alcohol you before they do the lethal injection, so I guess you don't get any cooties that'll kill you off before you get that lethal injection. Just a thought. But here we are. We're talking about whether or not we as a society want to execute juveniles 16 and 17 years old. Are you in favor of that? Is this the way you see our society? 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. However heinous the crime, however hideous the crime, do we want to execute juveniles as young as 16 or 17 years old? The court has already decided they're not going to execute younger juveniles, and they're not going to execute people who have mental disabilities. But if you're an older juvenile, 18, let's say, and older, they would execute you. If the question is, what about if you're the age of 16 and 17? Then what? I say no. I say we don't want to do that. I say that's not what we are as a society. I know it makes people feel good to say let's kill them, but think about it. It's easier on them. Let them be in jail and contemplate this for the rest of their lives. That's what I say. Let us be protected from them. 303-382-1150. And Travis sent me this. You might be a Republican if you're a pro-lifer, but you support the death penalty. You might be a Republican if you stop loving a person after they're born. You might be a Republican if you don't let your kids watch Sesame Street because you accuse Bert and Ernie of sexual deviance. You might be a Republican if you've argued that art has a moral foundation set in Western values. You might be a Republican if you think Birkenstock was at Radical Rock concert in 1969. But the line about being a pro-lifer but supporting the death penalty. 303-382-1150. Do we want to be executing juveniles? The Patriot Act. Some part of it has just been struck down. A federal judge has this struck down as unconstitutionally vague. The Patriot Act's ban on giving advice and assistance to groups designated as foreign terrorist organizations. But the act is not merely constitutionally suspect. There are better ways to make the country safe. This according to the New York Times. Listen to this. Inspect more of the shipping containers coming into ports in the U.S. Increase security around nuclear and chemical plants. Buy up enriched uranium before it falls into the wrong hands. But the money to do such things is in short supply after the president's tax cuts. Taking away civil liberties may not expand Mr. Bush, that's good. I like Fred. What would Fred say about that? George W. Bush, gaping budget deficit, but its price is in lost freedom is more than we can afford. If you were listening yesterday, my guest was Stephen Cannell, the successful producer and now novelist. He did The Commission, Rockford Files, and a lot of the A-Team and a lot of other things on TV. And we were talking in a break, and he has a private jet. And when that private jet comes in, there are none of the same kinds of restrictions that you have if you're flying commercial. You're not wanded. He says it's a huge hole in the security system. And he also said something really interesting too. He talked about if you were listening to the interview, he talked about doing some research for a book and dealing with the terrorist unit of the LA police. And the terrorist unit of the LA police is doing a lot of surveillance of people they have identified as a terrorist or potential terrorist. And the minute they come down on them for anything, however minor, that's it for them. Al-Qaeda drops them because they don't want to have anybody who might roll over on the organization. So that's it. That's one way of reducing terrorism in this country. Maybe these kids who have committed murders when they're 16 and 17 years old ought to be shipped to Iraq to fight or something. I don't know, 303-382-1150. But I certainly don't want to see him executed. Not as a matter of public policy. Matt, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Enid. My name's Matt. I'm 25 years old. I have a political science degree, a history degree, and I'm a Republican. And I just was hearing some of the things you were saying, and are you really serious about some of this stuff?
Well, why don't you tell me what you have a problem with?
Well,
And where did you get your degree?
From the University of Colorado.
Okay.
I guess I was a failure of the establishment out there. But the whole Halliburton thing and the Florida being stolen, it just seems like...
We haven't talked about that today. So where are you? Let's talk about what we're talking about today.
Well, I mean, you were talking about earlier about, Kerry not being that liberal.
Talking about who?
About John Kerry.
No, I didn't mention whether he was liberal or he wasn't. It was a question of whether he follows through on what he says he wants to do. But tell me what point you have a problem with. Where are you disagreeing with me on something that we talked about today?
Well, earlier today you were talking about John Kerry, and I think that you don't really support him that much. That you think he's maybe a little bit more conservative than what you'd like.
He voted for the Patriot Act. He voted for the tax cuts. He voted for the war. So he didn't vote for the things that he didn't vote the way I would have wanted him to vote. But tell me where you disagree with me. You called up with guns blazing, and then you referenced a conversation from 3 weeks ago. So let's stay in the here and now, Matt.
Well, some of the things that you say that are just, maybe it's not you specifically so much as, like, you were reading that letter. And you're saying if you're a Republican and you don't care about children until, you don't care about them after they're born. And, I mean, sometimes, certain candidates like Wes Clark, when he said the thing about...
Why are you a Republican, Matt? Tell me why you're a Republican.
I'm a Republican because I it's in my best interest to be a Republican. I pay all my own taxes. I have to write a check every month to pay my taxes.
Well, who doesn't? Who doesn't have to pay their own taxes?
Well, a lot of people have their withholding taken out every month, so it's not like it's real money.
It's always real money, and some people who are self-employed, if you're self-employed, you have to do it yourself in a different way than if you are salaried.
Yes, and I feel my tax burden right away, and I want my taxes to be as low as possible.
Because you don't love your country enough to want to support it?
No, it's because I know that there are only marginal returns to my higher tax rate.
Excuse me, what does that mean?
It means that, there are some people who would argue to lower the tax down and down and down. And to a certain point, having your taxes lower is better. But it goes the same way with raising your taxes.
What do you do for a living, Matt?
Huh? I'm an independent contractor.
Yeah, what kind of work do you do?
Corporate consulting.
Corporate consulting. And it sounds to me...
Management consulting.
All right, you're 25 years old. You have a degree in what from UC? Political science, did you say?
Political science and history.
Uh-huh.
I'm finishing my MS in finance.
Your MS in finance. And here's what I'm hearing you say, and forgive me for saying this. I'm hearing a selfish little yuppie telling me that he wants to keep his taxes as low as possible because he doesn't care about the rest of the country and he doesn't want to contribute to the upkeep. You just want to do what's good for you, and I think that's tremendously selfish. So you tell me how that's patriotic.
I think patriotic is saying that everyone should pay... a fair amount, and that it's not fair.
What, at what rate are you taxed, Matt?
I'm taxed at, I think it's 28 now.
Right.
And I don't think that...
So you want to keep your taxes as low as possible because you don't want to spend a penny more than you've got to, and you don't care about the rest of the country. You don't care about the common good, and I'll bet you think of yourself as tremendously patriotic.
I don't think that the government cares about the common good, to be honest. And I don't think the government spends the money in the best way.
Do you think $87 billion in Iraq is a great expenditure of our resources?
I think that if it prohibits, future dictators and tyrants from
First of all, what evidence is there that it will prohibit any future dictators and tyrants? There have always been dictators and tyrants. There will always be dictators and tyrants. And how is this in our best interest when it straps our own resources for what we can do in this country? It keeps the first responders over there. They are stretched extremely thin. Remember, we were going to be out of there in about 44 days. Remember, now we're never going to get out, and not in the foreseeable future. And it keeps us thin insofar as fighting against the people who have done us the most harm. So you'll see a push in spring, that's what's being reported, to go to Afghanistan, Pakistan, to see if they can bring back Osama bin Laden, who's maybe been on ice this whole time. They're going to bring him back right before the election. I don't know, but they'll make the push right there and then.
Yeah, that whole thing about
doesn't that trouble you as a and these high tax cuts that really only the very wealthiest benefit from. You're not benefiting from them. I've not seen any benefit from it, and I'm quite handsomely compensated. So I don't see where I think the very rich people are seeing the most benefit.
Well, I've benefited from it. I've felt several thousand dollars in benefits so far, and I'm certain that, I've been paid in stock for some of my work, so, that my rate was lowered on that dramatically, and I appreciate that. And also, I mean, this whole concept of that, didn't you say the Kurds had Saddam Hussein drugged in the hole?
That's what the English papers are reporting, that they're the ones who brought him in, they drugged him, they put him in the hole and left him there for the Americans to get the glory for.
We fished him
out of the hole, and we got the glory for it, and Bush got the bounce in the polls.
Well, perhaps I'm naive, but that sounds like some grassy knoll stuff. It just sounds, ridiculous.
Matt, I'm delighted that you called me today. You've been a good sport, but I want you to rethink your concept of patriotism and what it means to be a working member of the society. You got a degree in political science. What do you do to help the common good? What are you doing right now at the age of 25, besides trying to build your career, which is a very nice thing to be doing? But what are you doing for the rest of us?
Well, I contribute to the economy. I help businesses run more efficiently.
What are you doing hands-on to make this country a better place? Don't just tell me about your work. Aside from your work, how are you helping to make this country a better place? You volunteer anywhere? You donate anything?
Oh, yeah, I volunteer and I donate.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're giving you...
I volunteer for the Republican Party. I volunteer for the MBA Student Association at CU. We just created...
What do you do for something that isn't scratching your own back? Do you ever volunteer for people who are poor or in need or have literacy problems or anything like that?
You're only
hanging out with other Republicans trying to make contacts and network, and you're doing something with your master's degree, folks. But what are you really doing to help somebody besides yourself, man?
No,
I want you to contemplate that question as we continue. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. And you may wish to comment about Matt and his phone call. Feel free to do so.
KNRC morning man Greg Dobbs was Mr. Establishment at Berkeley back in the 60s. What happened? Find out morning 6 till 10, exclusively on AM 1150 KNRC.
Do you know the story? It's about a war, the very worst kind. It ripped apart our country, set American against American, North against South, free against slave. Now John Brown's Body, the newest production at the Denver Center Theater Company, brings to life the story of the Civil War. You meet Lincoln and Davis. You hear from Southern belles and Northern ladies. You sit across from slave traders as well as freedom fighters. You see the world through the eyes of a Yankee soldier and his Confederate counterpart. John Brown's Body transports you to the most troubled chapter in our country's history and gives voice to the human experience behind the facts and dates. John Brown's Body plays January 29th through February 28th at the Denver Center Theater Company. Do you know the story? The whole story?
Visit denvercenter.org or call 303-893-4100 today for your tickets.
Hi, my name is Larry. I'm from Laramie. I work for a lasso manufacturer in logistics. I like linguine and looking out the window for long periods of time. My boss thinks I'm lazy. Hope I don't get laid off.
Sounds like Larry might have a thing for a Sullivan Digital Dock L Work Center. Just $99 with a free hutch at this week's Office Max Business Savings event. Also, buy one HP multipurpose case, get one free. At Office Max, unbeatable savings is our thing. What's your thing?
Guess I'd move to Chicago. Heard they got a train there called the L.
Offer ends January 31st. See store for details.
Some people prefer the right wing. Others prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. Our diverse lineup of talk show hosts features more viewpoints and perspectives than any other Denver talk station. Join Greg Dobbs from 6 to 10 a.m. Bill O'Reilly from 10 till noon. Enid Goldstein from noon to 3. Doug Kellett from 3 to 6. Dominic and Bill from 6 to 9 p.m. Lionel from 9 to midnight, followed by Alan Combs. Get your side. Get their side. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
128 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about a lot of things, whether or not we as a society want to execute 16 and 17-year-olds for however heinous the crime is that they have committed. We don't let them vote till they're... How old do you have to be to vote? 18 or is it 21? I don't remember, but you can't do much before you're 18 anyway. Well, what's the legal drinking age? 18? 21 for booze? Yeah, we don't let you drink till you're 21. Can you get 3-2 beer or something when you're 18? I don't remember, but we don't let you do a lot until you're 18. And how old do you have to be to drive? 16? 16 to drive. You can drive to the crime and commit it, but you can't drink until you're 21. So do we as a society want to do that? And if you're just listening, we had a caller named Matt, 25 years old, political science degree from CU, corporate consultant, and he loves paying as few taxes, as low a tax burden as possible. And most people agree with that, feel that way. But he doesn't want to pay anything, really, is what it sounds like. And he would probably consider himself very patriotic. Think about taxes. They've been so vilified. But what do your taxes do? They support this country. So if they're spent right, if the money is used wisely and not just siphoned off to the defense establishment for these bloated budgets or siphoned off $87 billion to Iraq because we got into a huge quagmire there, I'm in favor of supporting this country. And I did something that is sort of against the grain, and I'm new at this sort of thing, but, I could have, there was a situation where I could have paid off a mortgage very quickly. Everybody says, oh, don't do that. It was really a small little thing. And don't do that because you get a tax write-off. But then as I was thinking about it, it's either I have the choice of the tax write-off or I have the choice of that same money going into that pocket of the bank. And really, I'd rather that it goes to the government than into the pocket of the bank. That's all. It was very simple. But it's a very against-the-grain kind of thinking. Maybe I don't have that exactly right. But I started to think about what it means to contribute. I'm happy to pay my taxes if they go to the right thing. I don't want to pay more than I deserve to, but on the other hand, I do want to do my fair share. So here you had Matt, and you might want to comment, because any volunteer organization that he's involved with sounds like a networking opportunity to me, but he regards himself as patriotic, and he regards himself as a solid citizen. But I think he's prototypical of a certain thinking that is selfish, it's kind of yuppie-ized. 303-322-1150, Kashmir in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hello, please hear me out. I'll be the first one to say that I'm not patriotic. I don't care to be patriotic. I believe that the word patriotic, the term patriotic, just comes from America trying to make Americans feel happy about getting pimped by the system. Because if you look at it, we pay all these taxes, and we really don't have a say-so of where this money goes. They do what they will with it. I mean, look at George Bush with the war. And far as Republican and Democrat and all that stuff, this world is, I mean, not this world, but America is formed on is basically in a state of mind of white-collar gang members, just because you have these people that hate these people over here just because they're liberal or they're conservative. And to me, I don't think it's no better than the gang members that's in the neighborhoods killing each other because we're doing the same thing on a higher level. But I think the whole patriotic thing is just used to make us Americans feel happy about being pimped and keep us in line. And, they got so many people that are so fanatical about being patriotic, they'll go against anybody that...
But Kashmir, aren't you, if you're talking about the kind of conventional definition of the word, but aren't you glad to be living in this country? Aren't you happy that you're in this country?
I'm an American. Yes,
you're an American. Are you proud to be an American? I'm proud to be an American.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I'm proud to be an American, but I will say that I am not proud of what America stands for today. And America,
then fix it. Then fix it. Don't call up and bitch to me. Then you get off your behind and you do something to fix it. Do something to make your neighborhood better. Do something to make your friendships better.
So the other listeners can catch on to what I'm saying. I do this with many radio stations across America. You're not the only.
And what are you doing besides calling up to radio stations? What are you doing hands on to make this world a better place?
I'm a 23-year-old, and I can tell you right now that you are the type of person where you sit behind a microphone and that's all you do.
I am asking you, you don't know what I do, Kashmir. I am asking you, besides calling up and bitching to radio stations, what are you doing to make this country better? Call up and bitch.
Well, first off, I'm voting. Second of all, I'm teaching my generation about the generation above us.
What do you do for a living, Kashmir?
Actually, I'm a musician. But I also, there's a place called The Spot. You might have heard of it. It's a teen youth organization.
Yes, that's a very good place.
Okay, I used to work down there. I was the assistant music coordinator down there. And my whole thing is I'm teaching my generation to stand up for themselves and don't fall into the same traps you and other people are falling into. Our parents and things like that are falling into. We need to stand up and be more independent thinkers and not let America brainwash
us. And we need to do some hands-on work to make where we are and
Absolutely.
Our lives, our neighborhoods, the
right.
friendships around us all better. I thank you for the call, 303-382-1150. You want to comment on Kashmir's call? The lines are full. I think there's one line open. Grab it, 303-382-1150. 1150 Carson in Teller County. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Well, hi. Enid.
Hi, Carson. Turn
radio.
You got to turn it off. Carson.
Well, actually,
you've called enough to know that you got to do that. We have a delay. And what we do is we hang up on people who don't know the rule here because it drives us all nuts.
What's that?
You know,
hello?
Call us again, Carson, 303-382-1150. Ashley in Englewood. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I'm also a 25-year-old, and I graduated from CU.
Yeah.
I'm a Republican, although I tend to be pretty moderate, I think. And I'd love to listen to you because I love that you challenge my ideas, and you really make me think. And I do tend to, I think I'm becoming more of an independent thinker. I wanted to comment on your death penalty thing. I am pro-life, but I am against the death penalty. And kind of for the same
reasons.
So
at least you're consistent.
Yeah, I mean, for the same reasons I think you are. I think that it doesn't really deter
it doesn't.
Know, people that are going to do bad things are going to do bad things. And,
right.
And I think locking them up in prison for life would, I mean, for a 17-year-old kid, that means a lot more to them than, you know, like you said, you know, some drugs and they're gone. And they
That's just, right. You go to sleep and you never wake up.
Exactly. And
after you packed yourself with surf and turf,
yeah.
Right before.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to make that comment that not all Republicans are like that. And
who do you think you're going to vote for in this election, Ashley?
You know, I've really been trying to weigh and really paying close attention to the Democratic race, and it's confusing and it's hard, and I think Bush has made a lot of mistakes.
Who's made a lot of mistakes?
I think Bush has made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. How do you feel about being lied to as a reason for going to war?
Well, and you know, it's hard because I'm not quite sure if, you know, I'm trying to not, I don't know, buy into the whole, you know, well, you know, I think, you know, the Bush administration is pushing it on the CIA and the CIA is pushing it on the Bush administration. And so I think it's really confusing. I think now that it's all said and done, it's kind of like, well, we're, you know, yeah, maybe they weren't weapons of mass destruction, but, you know, we're still better off, which, you know, I don't really
Are not better off.
Right.
We are really, he took out Saddam Hussein, who was not an immediate threat, and they had to make it sound like it was going to be an immediate threat, or they could not have sold it to the American public.
Right.
And now their lies are coming unraveled, unglued. And a lot of people who felt it was a good idea to go in and now realize they've been lied to are sort of rationalizing, well, it's good that we got rid of a tyrant. Well, sure. But what was the cost to benefit ratio?
Yeah.
He wasn't an immediate threat, and now we are so strapped for our own domestic programs. We're very strapped in trying to fight real terrorism, the terrorism who have hurt us the most, that we are really you can make a very valid argument that the country is less safe, not more safe, for going into Iraq.
And
that to me is disappointing, that he said he would restore honor and dignity to the White House, and really it's just been a tissue of lies.
Well, I think he spends too much money. I think for a Republican it's pretty ironic that he's just such a huge spender.
And huge deficits.
And
there's a convention now in Davos, Switzerland, of the big money heads of the universe, and they are very concerned because if we go snarky in terms of our economy, it destabilizes the whole world economy. So much is pegged to the United States now. We are the only superpower. And I have to say, I read an interview with Bill Clinton while I was gone, and Bill Clinton said, look, we are dominant, but in history it is only a fleeting moment of dominance until China gets its engine revved up, which is very close to doing, and India does too. And then we will be supplanted by countries like that, or at least we could be. And we are just squandering what we have going for us now. It really breaks my heart. Ashley, I hope you'll call us again. I appreciate your thoughtfulness. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. 1:38, time to check into the KNRC newsroom and check in and get a report with Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 51 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by General Motors. Aurora police are still looking for five suspects who were involved in an incident yesterday afternoon in which a man was shot and wounded while his brother was kidnapped. The five suspects had gone to a home in Aurora to close the sale of a pickup truck the shooting victim was selling. The suspect's vehicle is a 1992 Ford SUV with Colorado tag 013JAR. An anti-war march in downtown Denver this afternoon brought out about 100 protesters. Those marching say the Bush administration is orchestrating a distorted view of the war in Iraq by not allowing American television to show the caskets of U.S. casualties upon their return from the Middle East. The Denver Rescue Mission is asking for the donation of winter clothes. The Rescue Mission is in need of outdoor winter weather clothing such as waterproof boots, long underwear, socks, sweaters, hats, and scarves. You can drop off these donations 24 hours a day at the Rescue Mission at 23rd and Park Avenue West. In sports, the Chicago Bulls come to the Mile High City tonight to play the Denver Nuggets. Nuggets knocked off Chicago when they last played in November. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button and OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:39.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hey, what are you doing on the computer?
Believe it or not, I just finished our taxes.
Come on.
Yeah, with TurboTax software.
Are you sure we did it right?
Yes. TurboTax asks you simple questions, and it puts the answers on all the right forms.
Well, what if we made a mistake?
Well, it checks for errors and misdeductions, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Wow.
I know. So now I can print our return and mail it, or file it electronically, and we're done.
I've always liked that TurboTax.
Really?
TurboTax. Taxes made easy, taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC News Time is 1:40. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of Bank One, home of maximum strength checking. Real problems are construction, so watch for that. Parker Road between 470 and Arapahoe. Also southbound US 85 at Titan Road. And some road construction in either direction, I-70 between Tower Road and the Boulder Turnpike. Stop by Bank One and get maximum strength checking, the most powerful form of checking known to money. Now with free customized email alerts that can save you money. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We'll experience some falling temperatures through the afternoon from the upper 40s to near 50, back into the low 40s and upper 30s, Canadian cold front pressing down on us, but skies will stay mainly clear, and it'll be fair tonight. We'll drop down to a low around 26, another sunny day tomorrow with a high of 54, mostly sunny and low 50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 51 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:42. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Warm up your winter with a roof-raising celebration of the music and times of electrifying jazz legend Alberta Hunter. The new Denver Civic Theater at 721 Santa Fe Drive presents a loving tribute to an icon of the blues, legendary songstress Alberta Hunter, whose international career spans a century. Critics agree the show is red hot, astonishing, electrifying, delicious entertainment. Cooking at the Cookery, set in 1977, is written, directed, and choreographed by Marianne J. Caffey. It stars Tony nominee Ernestine Jackson and Janice Lorraine, who impersonates Hunter with sass, energy, and musical savvy, says Donald Lyons of the New York Post. Tickets are just $40, Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m., weekend matinees at 3 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. Celebrate Super Sunday with Alberta Hunter for the 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. shows. Buy one ticket, get the second free. Use code Super Bowl Special at the new Denver Civic Theater box office, 303-309-3773.
KNRC Market Watch.
Investors are throwing a little tantrum after the Federal Reserve left short-term interest rates unchanged and issued its statement about the economy. Dow Industrials now down 102 points inside the final hour of trading. NASDAQ is losing 22. The S&P 500 is off 10 points. No one expected the Fed to change rates, but MarketWatch.com chief economist Dr. Erwin Kellner says investors are worried about the Fed's statement about the economy.
It was a slight surprise, not to me, but to the market, certainly to the bond market and to the stock market as well. And that is that the Federal Reserve took away its open-ended commitment to keeping interest rates low.
And now some investors are circling June on their calendars. According to Fed funds futures at the Chicago Board of Trade, they show investors betting the Fed will hike rates by a quarter point at the June meeting. Earlier, the market saw the first hike coming in August. And on Wall Street, Dow's off 108 points. I'm Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
144 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And we've been talking politics. We've been talking about whether it's a society we want to execute teenagers who are 16 and 17 years old. I say absolutely not. It is a proposition that's going to be considered by the Supreme Court. Let's go to the phones. Tyrone calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid. How are you?
I'm good, Tyrone.
Man, the last time I was in Colorado, I spoke with you. I just got back from South Africa myself. How was your trip?
My trip was good. Why were you in South Africa?
Well, my brother lives in South Africa. He's lived there 7 years now.
Who does?
My brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he lived there 7 years. And, you know, unfortunately, South Africa is like heaven and hell if you've ever been there. You know, it's really not what you think, you know?
I've heard it's beautiful.
It is, you know, I mean, the scenery and everything is just out of this world. But the politics and the people are really going through things. But I really wanted to make a comment about something you said in your first hour about the singles list.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime next week I'll be joining that singles list. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, next week I think I'll be joining the singles
list. Oh, Tyrone, well.
No, it sucks, but. I had to do it. I feel it's what's best for me. I don't know. Being single's not a bad thing. And I'm wondering, because you sound like such a wonderful person, why are you single? You just like, you have a double personality or something? You kind of sound like, you know.
Well, you know, some of us regard marriage as a kind of velvet prison. I don't know. Maybe if I... I don't know. It's a good question. I'm going to contemplate this. And Tyrone, I'm really sorry. Was this your fiancé who had... Have I got you confused with somebody else?
Or no, you were married? No, he's my fiance. The one's Confederate flag.
With the I was just going to say with the Confederate flag.
Yeah, I just, you know, she actually, you know,
there was a Confederate flag tattoo, and some weeks back we were considering what Tyrone should do about this.
Well, I just think it's time for me to test the waters a little bit, you know, and you know she agreed to move out next week under stipulations, you know, that she can come back in her times of need or whatever. I don't know how that's going to work out, but. Anyway, but I wanted to say something about George Bush. And, you know, when people make that comment, well, you know, we got Saddam Hussein because he's a bad guy and everybody's a lot better off. Then, you know, I turn the question, well, what about North Korea? Are they, you know, I mean, doesn't that make the Bush administration look like a hypocrite to even make that statement?
Listen, I think this administration is so messed up, I don't even know where to begin. I think in any real measure of what makes an administration good, they have failed. And that they have been able to hoodwink so many people is a source of great befuddlement to me. I can't imagine how they've managed to pull the wool over everybody's eyes. But Tyrone, I do wish you all the best.
Who are
welcome,
you going to endorse?
Welcome back from South Africa. And sorry about your entering the singles list. 303-382-1150. Charlie on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Ian. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm Dear Abby today. And the doctor is in. Well, the doctor's never in. The doctor's usually out of her mind. But how can I help you?
Well, I've got a vent. I was listening to Matt, and I was about ready to bite my steering wheel in half. And I'm not one of those people who doesn't work and doesn't pay, you know, taxes.
We got a very selfish generation here that thinks that they're in that this is all gonna exist because it's always existed and it's what they grew up with. They have no idea of the fragility of it. They have no idea that they're a participant and that there's an admission charge to living in this country. Besides scratching your own back.
Yeah, I probably pay, you know, I probably pay more in, you know, taxes than Matt makes in a year. And I want to remind Matt that he went to a state school, so I helped pay for him.
Well,
to,
he forgot that part.
To go to school, yeah.
Well, he forgot that you were paying taxes so that he could go to see you and be selfish forever after.
Yeah, we seem to have this attitude on the right, and especially among the youth on the right, that it's basically, hey, I got mine and screw you. Well, they didn't get it on their own. Now, granted, yes, it takes hard work. You have to plan, et cetera, et cetera. But it also takes a heck of a lot of help on the way. And I guess I'm glad that my parents' generation didn't have the same attitude that I hear now coming from so many. And that's it. Well, I'm not going to pay any taxes. I'm not going to help this. Get it yourself.
Well, let me tell you, I just came back from Venice. I got back Monday night.
But that was fun.
It was fun, but it was illuminating in ways that I didn't expect it to be. Excuse me. And one of the ways was I watched girls and boys, men and women, walking together, conversing together, body language so completely different from what we see here that I was forced to sort of stand there and just stare. It was that, I think it was something from a much earlier time in American life where people spoke easily. I didn't see a lot of people who were pierced and tattooed. I didn't see that disaffected, you owe me, that, you know, I'm mad at the world look that you see with a lot of people in their teens and in their 20s and even older than that, even adults who are walking along the streets, busy, preoccupied, not necessarily happy. You didn't see that in Venice. What you saw was an ease, a pleasure in life, a pleasure in each other, an ease of talking, and it was so refreshing that I had forgotten that it had ever even existed.
That's amazing. Well, I guess I haven't. If I think about it, I probably noticed that to a point. But there does seem to be a lot of people, especially on the call-in, most of the talk shows that have a chip on their shoulder that everybody's out to get them, and I'm going to stop them, and all that. It's kind of scary in a way.
Well, it's kind of scary, but I think we've lost the idea that if things aren't working, we can do something about it. What we have is the idea of, well, it's not working, and somebody better fix it. Well, all right, get off your behind and start to fix it.
And it's your fault.
Yeah, it's if you're passive, and in part, I think we become passive as a society because it's an easier audience to deliver to an advertiser.
Yeah. I said to Doug a few weeks ago, we kept talking about big government, and I said, people don't like big, or people like big government. What they don't like is paying for it. We are perfectly willing to have the government do everything for us as long as we don't have to pay for it.
Right, and you can't have it both ways.
That's exactly right.
And right now what we're trying to do is starve the beast and pretend that we can still live as high on the hog as we had previously, but there's no money for programs. There's a wonderful program that's got no money. It's something that will drug testing for, convicts or something. And that's gonna fall by the boards.
You were talking earlier about shipping, you know, containers not being checked. And I've read somewhere that only about 3% of them are checked. And let's say that's wrong.
I'll tell you what else goes unscreened: the cargo in planes still going unscreened.
Yeah, but let's say that's wrong. Let's say it's four times that good. Let's say 12% of them get checked. How much of that $87 billion that Bush asked for last spring, how many shipping and, you know, cargo containers could that have helped check to put a dent in real terrorist threats to our shores?
It's a good question. How many people could have been hired to guard our nuclear facilities, our water facilities? How many hazmat suits could have been shipped over to people who don't have them, who are supposed to be our first responders to those jurisdictions? How many people could have gotten a little bit of health insurance who don't have a penny of it? I mean, you could ask a lot of questions. It's gone over to Iraq, and more is going to follow. And they use some of that, a pretty good, you know, they use, what, about $8 million of it to protect the Miami, the police department, to protect against the protesters in Florida. So it is not all going to Iraq. But more and more, the feeling in this administration is to starve government. and more it is to reward their cronies. And I just think it's something that's wholly inconsistent with democratic ideals. Charlie, I thank you very much for
the
call. 303-382-1150. I'm Ina Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Denver's new conservative voice is on KNRC. Hear Doug Kellett afternoons 3 to 6, exclusively on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Join the Colorado Symphony Orchestra and Principal Pops conductor Doc Severinsen on January 30th and 31st for a celebration of the 20th anniversary of the CSO Chorus in a program including Pops, Jazz, and Broadway. Tickets available at all King Super's Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
Hi, folks. This is Larry King. Now, here's something you can take to heart. Welch's Purple Grape Juice. We all know by now that eating at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day can give us heart-healthy benefits. But did you know that just 1 6-ounce glass of Welch's Purple Grape Juice counts as a whole serving of fruit? In fact, a USDA study found that Welch's Purple Grape Juice has 3 times the antioxidant power of grapefruit or even orange juice. And as always, it's fat-free, cholesterol-free, and tastes great, too. So, would I start drinking Welch's Purple Grape Juice every day? In a heartbeat.
The KNRC Community Commitments.
The Ronald McDonald House offers comfort, hope, and love by providing a home away from home to out-of-town families receiving medical treatment for their children. They could use your help with donations of non-perishable food items and assistance with meal preparation. Both groups and individuals are needed for volunteer programs. If you can help, please call the Ronald McDonald House at 303-832-2667 or go online to ronaldhouse.org.
Stop by Bank One and get maximum strength checking, the most powerful form of checking known to money. Now with free customized email alerts that can save you money.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of retired General Tommy Franks on Tuesday, March 30th, and Steve Forbes on Monday, May 17th. Tickets are still available for these compelling speakers. For information on the remaining ticket packages, go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kellett. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1:55 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. We're talking politics. We're talking all kinds of things. We're talking yuppieism. We're talking about what your admission fee is to living in this wonderful country. What do you do to help support it? Are you somebody who's just sitting on the couch waiting for somebody else to do it? Where is the sense that we can do things, we can fix things on our own, whether it's going to the polls to vote, whether it's helping somebody in the community, whether it's helping a friend, whether it's making some little tiny piece of territory better than it was when you found it? Later in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by a couple of people that we all thought were dead, but they're not. They're going to be here in full regalia. John and Abigail Adams, it's part of the American Spirit Series, a fundraiser for the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities. And it is an evening with John and Abigail Adams, America's first true political couple. It's going to happen tomorrow night, February 19th. I thought it was in January, but it's Thursday, February 19th, 2004, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church, 18th and Broadway in downtown Denver. The individual general admission tickets are $35. And you can call 303-894-7951, extension 18, or you can purchase tickets online at www.ceh.org. Tomorrow we're going to be joined by Stanley Greenberg. He was Bill Clinton's pollster. He's written a book called The Two Americas. Remember, red and blue, they're equally divided right now. And he's going to tell us about the deadlock we're in and how we can actually break it. Friday, put this on your calendars, because I am very eager to talk to Kevin Phillips. He's written a book called, he's a Republican, and a very well-respected Republican strategist. He's written a book called American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. And so he will be with us on Friday next week. James Fallows, from having written for the Atlantic Monthly, a piece called Blind into Baghdad, how we were really led, the blind leading the blind into Baghdad. And David Denby next week, who is a movie reviewer for the New Yorker magazine, wrote a book called American Sucker. He was involved in a terrible divorce. He wanted to keep the family home. He wanted to make enough in the tech boom to be able to buy his soon-to-be ex-wife out, and he got so carried away with it, he got to be like an addiction, and he wound up not making anything. In fact, he lost it all. He lost everything. So we'll be talking with him next week as well. So that's the lineup. From James. James is the intelligence publication in Great Britain. James is writing that its readers are not in any doubt at all about its assessment of the Iraq campaign. And as I said, they are an intelligence publication. It has long been our view that the available intelligence did not provide a justification for military intervention by the USA and its allies, no matter how appalling Saddam Hussein may have been as a leader. Our main concern, James writes, however, was that the invasion of Iraq was a dangerous distraction from the very real threat posed by international terrorists, particularly Al-Qaeda and its network. It's going to cost us a lot of money. They predict no end in sight, which is true both of the costs and of the actual conflict. Terrorism may be horrendous, a means to an end, but we're not against all terrorists. For example, the Tamil Tigers are not our enemies at the moment, and the Basques, ETA, not our enemies, so we're not fighting all terrorism. We're just fighting some of it, with no end in sight, writes James. In the next hour, Abigail and John Adams in full regalia right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Sides Talk, AM 1150, KNRC, Inglewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 51 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by James Hardy Building. Detectives investigating yesterday's shooting and kidnapping in Aurora got a break last night when they recovered the pickup truck belonging to the shooting victim. Aurora police spokeswoman Kathleen Walsh says investigators will be giving that recovered truck a thorough going over.
Well, our CSI unit, Crime Scenes Investigation Unit, will process the truck for any type of evidence they can find. Fingerprints or any material that could connect this truck or vehicle to the suspects in our case.
Five suspects went to a home in the 800 block of Oswego near Del Mar Park to close the purchase of the shooting victim's pickup truck yesterday afternoon. One of the five men pistol-whipped and shot the truck's owner. The five suspects then kidnapped the victim's brother, 19-year-old Jose Palma Lujan. Walsh says that authorities are still looking for the getaway car.
That would be a blue or brown 1992 Ford SUV with a Colorado license plate 013JAR.
The shooting victim is hospitalized and is expected to recover from a gunshot to the groin area. President Bush is orchestrating a distorted view of the war in Iraq by not allowing American television to show the caskets of U.S. casualties upon their return from the Middle East. This from about 100 protesters who marched through downtown Denver today, led by pallbearers carrying a symbolic coffin. Among a series of speakers gathered in front of the U.S. Customs Building was Ellen Stark, who thinks she knows why Bush is keeping those coffins out of camera range.
Because it might bring home the reality of this war. And Bush and his advisors do not want anything to challenge their ideological construct of the world.
Marchers carried a placard with a drawing of a gravestone bearing the name of a U.S. soldier who lost his or her life fighting in Iraq. The Denver Rescue Mission is asking for donations of winter clothes for the homeless. Spokeswoman Greta Ritchie says they need all types of winter clothing.
We are in great need of winter weather clothing. Anything that you would wear if you're going outside in cold weather conditions. Things such as waterproof boots, long underwear, socks, coats, sweaters, scarves, and hats.
Mike Encinas of Denver explains why he decided to stop by the rescue mission with a trunk load of winter clothing.
You know, just thought we'd help out. We know we have closets to clean out. I'm sure everybody has closets to clean out, you know, plenty of stuff to give. So that's why we came down.
You can drop off those donations 24 hours a day at the Rescue Mission. That's at the corner of 23rd and Park Avenue West. Outgoing Chief U.S. Weapons Inspector David Kay says pre-war assumptions about stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were incorrect. Dr. Kay told a Senate hearing, "We were all wrong." Kay challenged pre-war intelligence on Iraq, a point highlighted by Massachusetts Democrat Ted Kennedy.
Many of us feel that the evidence so far leads only to one conclusion, that what has happened was more than a failure of intelligence, was the result of manipulation of the intelligence to justify a decision to go to war.
Kay has spent several months leading a team searching for WMD inside Iraq. Weapons of mass destruction were the principal rationale for the U.S.-led war against Iraq. U.S. officials say the military is gearing up for a spring offensive against Taliban and Al-Qaeda guerrillas in Afghanistan. Citing unnamed military sources, the Chicago Tribune says the campaign involves thousands of troops and will be going after Al-Qaeda refugees in Pakistan. Another official says the offensive would be similar to expanded previous operations in which troops went after guerrillas and their transit routes in the Afghan mountains bordering Pakistan. The Pentagon and the military central command refused to comment on any future military operations. Democratic presidential hopefuls are putting New Hampshire and Iowa behind them and focusing on the future. Senator John Edwards is in South Carolina trying to shore up votes in his home turf, while Senator Joseph Lieberman is in Oklahoma. Oklahoma and South Carolina are among the seven states holding primaries or caucuses next week. Stocks have fallen today. Just before the close of today's trading session, the Dow is down more than 167 points, the NASDAQ down more than 42, the S&P 500 down about 15.5. In sports, the Denver Nuggets will be playing host to the Chicago Bulls tonight. When the Nuggets and Bulls last played in November, the Nuggets came away with a win. Colorado Avalanche have the night off after their 3-1 win over the Edmonton Oilers last night. The Avs hit the road again tomorrow as they head to L.A. to play the Kings. College basketball tonight, CU Buffs host the University of Missouri Tigers. James Hardy Siding provides homeowners the beauty of wood without the usual maintenance. Visit them on the web at jameshardy.com to learn more. That's JameshardieDIE.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
PlayingPolitics2004.com is picking up evidence of intelligent life in the far center. These sounds, audible only to people who are reasonable and humorous about political debate, take several months to reach the unconditioned ear of demagogues on the far left and far right. But it's happening. The radical left and right are listening, but they are not amused. Unlike the Today Show, PlayingPolitics2004.com is separating the politicians from their real agendas by more than a floral arrangement. Do you want a humorous look at where Dean's really coming from? Rumsfeld's battlefield strategy, or Hillary's plans for you? What does Pat Robertson stand for and the ACLU kneel to? Or is it the other way around? These decks will tell you. Playing Politics 2004 card decks can be purchased at select Borders bookstores or at www.playingpolitics2004.com. We're doing business the old-fashioned way, legally.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Nestle Toll House, and its construction is causing the most problems around the metro area right now. Southbound US 85 right at Titan Road, watch for a bit of trouble due to some construction, as well as I-70 in either direction between Tower Road and the Boulder Turnpike. One more for you, some road construction is going to be on Parker Road between 470 and Arapahoe. Start your own tradition this year and bring your family together to bake your very best cookie recipe with America's favorite chocolate chip, Nestle Toll House Morsels. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We'll experience some falling temperatures through the afternoon, from the upper 40s to near 50, back into the low 40s and upper 30s. Canadian cold front pressing down on us, but skies will stay mainly clear, and it'll be fair tonight. We'll drop down to a low around 26, another sunny day tomorrow with a high of 54, mostly sunny in low 50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under mostly sunny skies, it's 50 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock. And the Colorado, we've been talking about this with us live in studio, two people that I thought were seriously dead, but apparently they're not. John and Abigail Adams, America's first true political couple. They are here because the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities is presenting the American Spirit Series, featuring John and Abigail Adams. The sponsors of the series are Frontier Airlines, Vectra Bank Colorado, and Republic Financial Corporation. The event, you will get to meet John and Abigail Adams for a wonderful evening. And this will occur Thursday, February 19, from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Trinity United Methodist Church in downtown Denver. It's at 18th and Broadway. Tickets are $35. They are available by phone. And let me give you the number, 303-894-7951, 303-894-7951, or online, www.ceh.org. The event is a fundraiser for programs of the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities. John Adams, Abigail Adams, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good day, madam.
It's my pleasure to be with you today.
I'm going to ask you to inform the rest of us who are perhaps a little deficient in our history. When exactly did you live?
I will give the short encyclopedia version of my life. I was born in 1735 on October 30th in Braintree, Massachusetts. I died in Braintree, Massachusetts on July 4th, 1826, 50 years to the day after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, an event in which I played a major role.
How old were you when you died?
I was nearly 91. I was a ripe old age for people in my time.
And what years were you president?
I was president from 1897 until 1801. I was the second president of the United States. I was vice president to the first president, George Washington. I served both terms as vice president.
Abigail Adams, when were you born?
I was born in 1764. I'm almost 10 years younger than my husband. And I lived to the age of 74 and predeceased him. My good man followed my coffin in the procession in the cold, crisp New England autumn, confident that he would be joining me very shortly and that we would be together in the afterlife. We'd been married for 54 years, and it has been a wonderful marriage, a wonderful partnership.
How many children did you have?
We had three who survived us. We lost some children in infancy.
And how did you meet?
I will allow Mrs. Adams to tell you of our courtship. She has a different view of it, of course, than I do.
We had known each other for really most of our lives because Braintree and Weymouth, Massachusetts, are only about 5 miles apart. John attended a wedding in my family, one of my relatives, which, of course, weddings at that time were a great community celebration. Everybody would come. And Mr. Adams recorded in his diary that there was a rather scrawny, very plain, stuck-up young girl there who was very much over-impressed with her own intellectual abilities, which he hastened to add were not nearly as formidable as she imagined them to be. But within a year, he was addressing letters to me, "Dear Miss Adorable."
What prompted you to do that after such a wanting evaluation?
I found that as I was riding circuit, I was an attorney traveling the court circuit, I spent more and more time in Weymouth and more time in the Smith home. And I found that young Miss Adorable was an enchanting woman. I also discovered that she was a woman who, though she had been educated at home by her parents, was incredibly well-read and was feisty, independent, and smart. She had as good a mind as any man I ever encountered.
How old were you at that time?
Oh, I was in my early 30s. I was kind of late to the marriage game.
How old, on average, were people when they got married in your time?
It was not uncommon for a full life in my time to equal 40 or 45 years, so I was rather late getting married. But it took me a while to find myself. I went to college, of course, right on schedule and graduated.
Where did you go to college, John Adams?
I went to Harvard. I was a graduate of Harvard in 1755, and I went for a year to Worcester, a town in western Massachusetts, taught school there for a year because I didn't know what I wanted to do. My family assumed I would be a minister, a pastor, and that's not something that appealed to me. So as a consequence, I taught school for a year while making up my mind. I, I met a lively attorney in Worcester who agreed to let me read law with him. And 2 years later, I was admitted to the bar in Massachusetts and began writing circuit and was getting my law career started. I didn't have too much time to think about marriage.
President Adams, when you were writing circuit, you were traveling from place to place, but not as a judge, as a lawyer?
As a lawyer. We went from place to place, serving as either a prosecutor or a defense attorney or serving in civil matters. It was not uncommon in those days for country lawyers to go from place to place to place.
And there weren't hotels around, so people would take you in. You would stay in people's homes.
Oh, the wonderful stories that would happen when we were traveling the circuit, although even as late as during the American Revolution, when Benjamin Franklin and I were sent on a mission to meet with the British General Howe, he and I were forced in New Brunswick, New Jersey, to stay in the same small room in an inn and to sleep in the same bed because there was absolutely no space. And that was one of the most frightening evenings of my life. As we were about to go to bed, I closed the small window in this room, and Dr. Franklin said, "Sir, open that window immediately. If you do not, the air inside will soon be more unhealthy than the air outside." I said, "Mr. Franklin, my view is exactly the opposite." And he said, "Well, you know, I have written papers on this. You open the window, get in bed, and I will tell you the benefits of sleeping with an open window." And I went to sleep that night while Dr. Franklin lectured.
Now, Abigail, do you think that your parents made their home available to this young attorney in hopes that something might happen between the two of you?
Often parents conspired in this sort of thing. I suspect that they knew that those talks by the parlor might produce a son-in-law eventually.
And did you know immediately upon meeting John Adams that this was somebody you were going to spend the rest of your life with, or did it dawn on you only gradually?
Perhaps a bit more gradually. I certainly was interested in him because I recognized a fine mind, and that is something that I prize very highly. And in conversations with him, I realized that just the depth of his intellect, and we were able to spend, for descendants of Puritans, really courtship was very unrestricted in our time. We took long walks together.
And didn't you kind of bundle in bed together too once in a while when it got cold with the family?
I know Jonathan Edwards, the preacher in Northampton, spoke roundly against the young people's habit of bundling. They thought that strange things might be going on under those blankets.
We were simply fortunate enough that we could spend time in the parlor and talking. And I even accompanied John on one of his trips on the circuit before we were married. And
you
I dare
were allowed to do
I
that?
I dare say in your time that would be a great scandal, but in my time that was accepted. We could do such things.
What year was that?
I disremember the exact year, but our courtship was about 2 years, and it was shortly before we married.
So in the
1765 or so.
1765. You were allowed to go unaccompanied, unchaperoned with him.
Yes.
On the circuit.
Yes.
Now, I am a collector of old etiquette books because they're a great provider of information. And Emily Post was writing in an etiquette book I found in the 20s that no young woman of any fine reputation whatever could ever, you know, live alone, unchaperoned, have her own apartment, for example.
Interestingly, although it happened after my lifetime, but my daughter-in-law, Louisa, was much more restricted in what she could do because she and John Quincy began their lives at the very beginning of the what you call the Victorian era. And there were many more rules and regulations and restrictions than really what I had in my time even, as far as day-to-day living for women.
If you're just tuning in, I am joined today in full regalia by John and Abigail Adams, who died quite a long time ago, but who are resurrected with us as part of the American Spirit series. The Colorado Endowment for the Humanities is presenting this series, an evening with John and Abigail Adams, America's first true political couple. Frontier Airlines is sponsoring, Vector Bank Colorado, Republican Financial Corporation, and this will occur on Thursday, February 19, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church in Denver, downtown Denver. And it's a wonderful history lesson, and because we're on the radio and people cannot see that you are dressed as John and Abigail Adams, because of course you are, I wonder if you could give us a sartorial description of how you are have come into the studio today because you are in full drag.
Would you care to go first, dear?
I suppose that ladies are more interested in that generally. I'm dressed in the Empire or Regency style, which is the high-waisted gown. I have no stays, which is a wonderful innovation as far as I'm concerned. The dress is very free-flowing, the skirt of it, so I'm not restricted.
Describe what stays are for people who may not know.
Oh, I believe perhaps in your time corset might be the closest term that you would recognize, but they're very restrictive, and when I was a girl, you wore them, and there was a busk in the front, which is actually a piece of wood or whalebone. You could not bend at the waist. It is considered most unhealthy to bend at the waist, and so it forced you to bend at the hips.
Could you not bend in the waist because this thing wouldn't allow you to, or because it was thought to be unhealthy and therefore it prevented you from doing it?
It was thought to be unhealthy.
To bend from the waist.
This garment was, you could not do it. Indeed, it was unhealthy because you would spear yourself in your tummy when you tried to do it.
Well, yes, there was that. And John Adams, please describe what you have on today.
May I confess to being a little embarrassed by this discussion?
Well, I haven't even gotten to the question about your sex life yet, but we'll get there.
Madam.
Yes.
I'm wearing a diplomatic suit that I would have worn when I was the American ambassador to the Court of St. James. It is black in color, made of wool. I have lace cuffs and collar, breeches, top coat. It is a standard gentleman's garb of my time.
How was it that you got involved in politics? Here you were, an attorney, a lawyer, a young lawyer riding the circuit. You two met and you married. And how soon was it after you two married, and where did you settle together? Where were you living?
We lived, I went to John's home. We had a house directly across the street from the one he'd been born in, where his mother still lived. And he simply cut a door where there had been a window to make his law office the first floor, the first room there in our house was his law office, and that was the house that we lived in.
I quickly became successful and spent more of my time in Boston, which is not all that far away, but eventually we were forced to move for a time to Boston. It was there that I began to get into politics, not intentionally. I was a passionate man. I was a passionate believer in the rule of law, and in Boston at that time, it was clear that the English were denying we colonials the rule of law. They were taxing us without giving us representation, and we were being treated much as the Irish were. We were really being treated as though we were a conquered people rather than a people who had voluntarily and lawfully settled in the New World with every intention of remaining loyal subjects to the crown.
So you became angry?
I, along with many others, grew to be angry as many of the British measures to make us pay grew more intense. And I think my pen was always one of my great strengths, and I began to write letters anonymously in the Boston press and gained a reputation for having a clear head when it came to the whole subject of how the British were treating the American people. I was one of the early leaders in that movement. Interestingly enough, I reached a crossroads where, on the one hand, I was an ardent revolutionary, yet on the other, I was asked to take the defense of those British soldiers and the British officer who had fired on an American group in the event you call the Boston Massacre. They had gathered to protest a British action, and the soldiers fired into the crowd, and a number of them were killed. It was a case that was considered political suicide. There were many, many lawyers in Boston who refused to undertake that case, knowing that they could not be popular, however it turned out. But as I said, I was so passionate and believed so strongly in the rule of law, I thought they were entitled to the very best defense that they could possibly have. And I gave them that defense. I argued passionately that these were soldiers who were obeying the orders of their superiors, doing what soldiers must do. The jury agreed with me, and these people were acquitted. Somehow, I came out of it more or less unscathed. I was not considered any less anti-English for having been able to defend these people.
My good man has an ability to persuade with logic and with reason. He is not a rabble-rouser. He was never one to stand up on a stump and whip a crowd into a frenzy. He's very logical and very linear in his thinking, and he presented it as an argument that appealed to reason, and he could communicate that to people and make them understand the loftier principles that have always been a part of his nature.
My guests are John and Abigail Adams. Let's go to the phones. Dave, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid, John, and Abigail Adams.
Hi, guys. Really, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes, to President Adams, I'd like to ask you about your really religious beliefs. I know that you had a real hard time with the Calvinists and their predestination, but I also know that you firmly believed in life after death, and you were a great proponent of free will, saying, what's the point of prayer if you can't have some choice in where you go after this life?
Thank you, sir. You have understood me clearly. I grew up in a Calvinist environment. Of course, for those of you who don't know, New England was a religious establishment. The political and the religious institutions worked side by side. Massachusetts was a commonwealth, which was an entity in which church and state were not only separated, but they worked in concert with one another, and it was not uncommon for people like my father, who was a deacon in the Congregational Church, to also be a selectman in our town. The two were so indistinguishable. But we were not rigid Calvinists. I think by the time I was born, the rigidity of that theological system was already giving way to better sense. And I was a man who understood, I think, clearly that the God who made me is the same God who made all of us. We are all going to understand that God differently, but we are all, by virtue of being creatures of the one God, responsible to him in one particular way. And that one way is to love one another and to try to love one another more than we love ourselves.
Dave, I thank you for the call. Did God want a Christian-based government, in your view, President Adams?
No, I don't think so. And in fact, later in my life, I authored the Constitution of the Commonwealth in Massachusetts, and when it was being revised later in my life, I argued that Jews should have the freedom to worship in Massachusetts just as do Christians. Now, that argument was not voted upon and passed, but that was my view. I thought we were all children of one God, and I believe that firmly.
You're listening to John and Abigail Adams. They're part of the American Spirit series. It's presented by the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities. And you will have a wonderful evening if you go Thursday, February 19th, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church. I'm Enid Goldstein. More as we continue. You're listening to the Wednesday and rather historical edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Fighting large corporate radio. We are Denver's only locally owned and operated talk radio station. Our bosses live and work here. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We're the Style Matters gals, and we love to shop.
But sometimes we don't like to shop for the same things. For example, I'm sick of looking for thigh-high white boots for you.
Well, that's because you have a short attention span. But there are two boutiques where we both love to shop. Posh and the Perfect Petal at 32nd and Lowell in the Highland neighborhood.
These two boutiques are more than just gift shops. They sell almost anything your little heart desires, such as Anthony's shaving and skincare lines for men, stylish hats, the accessory for this season, dishware, and decorative home items.
How about unique floral arrangements, the hottest new skincare line called Juice, and a bridal registry, invitations, and gifts? It's all at the Perfect Petal and Posh.
Two incredible boutiques, Posh and the Perfect Petal, at Lowell and 32nd Avenue in the Highland neighborhood. Open Monday through Saturdays, 9 to 8, Sundays, 11 to 5.
We both love to shop there because they give great shopping.
AM 1150 KNRC features more in-depth reporting than any other Denver talk station. Our in-depth reports have been recognized by the Colorado Broadcasters Association and the Associated Press for 4 awards of excellence. Hear in-depth reports from award-winning KNRC reporters Mark Roberts and Stacey Farb during the Greg Dobbs Morning Show or anytime at knrcradio.com where you can click it and own it. Denver's in-depth talk station, AM 1150 KNRC. Talk, to Doug Kalitz.
A lot of you got really upset at me when I was questioning, quote-unquote, your patriotism, when I was saying that some of the comments you were being made were actually hurting the troops, giving aid to the terrorists. You remember that. I'm sure you do. And some of you would call me and also email me. I'm highly offended that you would even suggest, even though I never used the term unpatriotic, did I? While indirectly, I might have been referring to you as a bunch of Jane Fondas. I never mentioned that you were unpatriotic.
Doug Kalitz, weekdays from 3 to 6 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Dominic Brascia.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
227 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. And with me in studio today in full regalia, John and Abigail Adams, long thought dead, but here today, appearing right now at AM 1150 KNRC. They are, of course, former President John Adams and his beloved wife, Abigail. It's the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities presenting them as part of the American Spirit Series. The sponsors are Frontier Airlines, Vector Bank Colorado, Republican Financial Corporation. And this is an event which is a fundraiser for programs of the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities. It will be a wonderful evening. Scheduled for Thursday, February 19, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at downtown here in Denver at the Trinity United Methodist Church. Tickets are $35, and as I said, this event is a fundraiser. You can get them by phone, 303-894-7951, or online at ceh.org. John and Abigail Adams, you were said to have had an extraordinary relationship. Why?
I respected her mind. I thought Mrs. Adams one of the most intelligent people I had ever known, and I sought her advice. Her advice was often the best advice I could have gotten, whether I was functioning as a minister in France or the Dutch Republic or whether I was president of the United States.
And here you were, very well traveled. You presided over the various legations and in Paris and.
In my day, we called them legations. I believe now you would call it an embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I traveled to France, and we had our home there was the American legation to the French court, and then we went to London and had the American legation.
How long did it take you to sail from? Where did you sail from?
Far too long. I was seasick, and the entire crew of the ship was seasick. I did manage to clean the vessel while we were going, and I even tried my hand. I stirred up some puddings and helped the crew to try out some new recipes and tried to make things as pleasant as we could, but it was a dreadful crossing.
Was this a commercial vehicle that you took, or was this a vehicle under the auspices of the United States?
No, it was a commercial sailing ship, yes.
And how long, do you recall how long it took you to make the crossing?
In excess of a couple of weeks, several weeks.
Could you speak French?
Or did
you learn
it
when you got there?
I had tried in my father's library to learn foreign languages, and I was finally forced to concede, much to my disappointment, because I thought that I could accomplish anything that I really set my mind to, but I could not learn foreign languages by myself. When we went to France, of course, I had the opportunity to practice more, but for all of Mr. Jefferson's proclamations that, oh, he loved the French and he was perfectly at home there, he spent many, many, many hours pleasantly visiting with my good man and me. I'm most pleased to speak his own native language as well as ours.
I suspect he was not the French speaker that history has perhaps remembered. I seem to remember that I spoke French better than Mr. Jefferson.
President Adams, if I were to ask you your proudest accomplishment as president, and you were the second president of the United States, having served as a vice president under George Washington, what would you tell me?
I once said that if I could have an epitaph, I would like it to be this. Here lies John Adams, who avoided war with France in the year 1800. During my presidency, the French, the Napoleonic French, were anxious to get the United States to join them in their struggle against Great Britain. We, on the other hand, negotiated a commercial treaty with the British. I was a part of that whole process and did not please them, obviously. They began to treat us badly. They would stop our ships at sea. They would impress our seamen into the French Navy, just literally take them on board and make them French sailors. They were treating us badly. And many in the United States, realizing that we were being insulted and slighted, wanted to go to war. They wanted to go to war desperately, and it grew even worse when we sent a delegation to France in the hopes of negotiating a peace, and the French prime minister announced that if we didn't pay him bribes and bribes to some of his agents, our representatives couldn't even talk to them. Well, out of that grew the famous American statement, millions for defense, but not one red cent for tribute. The people in the United States were angry. They were just on the verge of war. General Washington was appointed our commander-in-chief, and he insisted on Alexander Hamilton as his deputy, who began to raise a large army and hoped to take away those French properties that were still in our new world, French Louisiana.
And what was the population of our country at that time?
We were a pretty small country, and we didn't have much of an army. The Navy was started in my presidency. The very first frigate was launched. I was the one who instituted the first Secretary of the Navy. I'm the one that believed that the Navy was like a wooden wall which could protect us here in this continent so far removed from Europe. But there were many who wanted to participate in some form or fashion in that European war, and I thought it would be absolute suicide. Well, the Jeffersonian camp, the Democratic Republican faction, didn't like me because they thought I was an ardent war advocate. My own party, the Federalists, and Alexander Hamilton was one of them, didn't like me because they knew I really didn't want to fight a war. So I was being excoriated by both sides. And finally, having had enough and being a man of principle, I decided to do the right thing. I sent a delegation overseas. This time they were received by the French with no difficulties, and we successfully averted war.
Through diplomacy.
Through diplomacy.
You did not rename the potatoes Freedom Fries.
Ma'am, I understand the day in which you live, and I must say that if one wants to be reelected, one should go to war. That decision of mine cost me my reelection. It made me very unpopular.
But it saved lives.
It
so
saved
your
many
observation
lives.
As president, the second president of the United States, if you want to be reelected, you go to war because it's more politically popular to do that.
Yeah.
But
if you want
to save lives, you indulge in diplomacy.
I think we were a small nation, and the better part of our valor was to realize that diplomacy would get us much farther than military threats.
Did you know that your son would become a president of the United States?
Did not know it, but lived to see it, and I was so proud of my son, one of the great men in American history. He not only, here again, a one-term president, because he did the right thing rather than politically expedient things, he, after serving in the White House, became a member of the humble House of Representatives and served there for many years. Can you imagine a president in your time doing something like that?
John Quincy Adams. And he was what number president was he?
He was the sixth, and an ardent abolitionist. It was he, when the slaves revolted on the ship Amistad, who undertook their defense and got them acquitted.
If you're just tuning in, I'm joined by President John Adams and his beautiful wife, Abigail Adams, and they're part of the American Spirit series. This is a fundraiser, the 2004 fundraiser for the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities. They're dressed in full regalia here in the period, and as we continue, we will talk with them and find out how, in this lengthy journey, how they became John and Abigail Adams. But before we do that, Abigail Adams, having done very many things, how old were you when you married John Adams?
I was not quite 20.
Having done very many things that women of your age and time did not do, you were taken seriously by your husband. Your advice, in fact, was sought.
Was sought after, yes.
And you had there's a whole year's worth of correspondence between the two of you, which has formed the basis of much scholarship and many books. And you got to travel to other places to live. What could you say one of the highlights of your life with John Adams was? I mean, I'm sure there were very many highlights, but how you were changed in some fundamental way.
I think that probably the overriding thing in my life was that my husband valued me. He looked to me for advice.
Was
and
this
he
rare?
Listened. It was very rare, unfortunately, in my time. It was thought that women were not capable of the deep thought that men could bring to bear on philosophical issues. Women were thought to be quick but shallow. And my good man knew that my advice was always to be valued and listened to. When I wrote the letter, Remember the Ladies, when they were writing their documents and that are still in use in your time. What I was saying was, remember that not all women are fortunate enough to have a good man to be married to allow them to excel in their sphere, which is the home, to be an excellent wife and a good mother. And if they are not fortunate enough to have a man who will provide that home for them, then they must be looked after. In a society dedicated to equality, they must be provided for. There must be safeguards for women in that society.
As we continue, you will meet, you'll learn more about John and Abigail Adams and who they may be in another in their other incarnations. And we're talking, of course, about a fundraiser for the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities. It's part of the American Spirit series, An Evening with John and Abigail Adams, America's First True Political Couple, Thursday, Feb 19, 2004, at historic Trinity United Methodist Church. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 2:38, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 49 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Money Mailer. State Republicans are asking the U.S. Supreme Court to temporarily block the congressional redistricting map that was crafted by a judge. Republicans say that the redistricting should be done by lawmakers and not by a judge. Aurora police continue to investigate a shooting and kidnapping incident that happened yesterday afternoon. One man was shot in the groin while his 19-year-old brother was kidnapped. Police continue looking for the suspect's vehicle, a 1992 Ford SUV with Colorado plates 013JAR. A judge in Lamar has ruled that 32-year-old Rebecca Amaya is competent to stand trial for the drowning deaths of her two children. Police say Amaya drowned her 4-year-old daughter and infant son in the bathtub at the family's home. Investigators, she told them a spider walked across her hand, and she took that as a sign to kill her children. She then apparently tried to slash her own wrists. Her attorney says they'll probably use an insanity defense at trial. In sports, the Denver Nuggets welcome the Chicago Bulls to the Pepsi Center tonight. Nuggets beat Chicago in November when they last played. Look for Money Mailer's jumbo red, white, and blue envelope arriving this week in your mailbox. Money Mailer is packed with coupons and money-saving offers from businesses in your neighborhood. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:40.
Decorating hopes you'll forgive us for bragging a little. We've won an award. And because the environment is really important to us, we're pretty proud of it. Velcaro, a Benjamin Moore dealer, was recently named a recipient of the Environmental Achievement Award by the state of Colorado. What's our achievement? It's the Wet Paint Color Swatch program, which Velcaro pioneered nationally. As you know, choosing the right paint color is usually by trial and error. In the past, consumers had to buy an entire quart to get a sample. Wrong colors often get tossed out and eventually make their way into the environment. But Velcaro offers 1.5-ounce paint swatches, enough to cover 4 square feet, and more than enough to make the right decision. They're inexpensive and come in more than 6,000 colors, including our entire Benjamin Moore line. Wet paint color swatches. Good for you, good for the environment. From Velcaro Paint and Decorating, a Benjamin Moore quality paint dealer. 5475 Leedsdale Drive, just one block west of Holly. Online at Velcaro.com.
KNRC News Time is 2:41. Time to check in with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. And we've got a couple problems we need to tell you about that are coming in late. Southbound I-25 right around Park Avenue West got a stall in the left lane. Watch for that. Got an injury accident coming in the Aurora area, Chambers and Mississippi. A Waterway Car Wash is your best weapon for fighting winter salt, slush, and grime. Make the Waterway Winter Protection Package your first line of defense. Visit today. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The lower elevations feeling the change with a Canadian cold front bumped up against the mountains. Temperatures will fall somewhat through the afternoon, back into the low 40s and upper 30s, but will stay dry with a nice amount of sunshine. It'll be mainly clear tonight with a low around 26, sunny 54 tomorrow, low 50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 49 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:42. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm
I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major averages did an about-face once the Fed made its announcement about interest rates, and all three closed in the minus column. The Dow Industrial sank 142 points to 10,468. The NASDAQ fell 39 points to 2077. The S&P 500 lost 16 points to 1128. Big board volume was about 1.8 billion shares. Decliners beat advancers by an 8-3 margin. The Fed left interest rates unchanged, but now says it'll be patient before raising rates again. Earlier, the Fed said it would keep rates low for a considerable period. Analysts believe the change in wording sparked the late-day sell-off, and now they think a rate hike could come sooner than first thought. Also, durable goods orders were unchanged last month, but they were weaker than expected. New home sales hit a record last year, but they dipped about 5% last month. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
2:44 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours till 3 o'clock, so only for about 16 more minutes. And with me in the studio, wearing the clothes of the time, are President John Adams and his lovely wife, Abigail Adams, both of whom we thought were long and seriously dead, but they are resurrected for their appearance today on Enid Live, and you can meet them as well. And they take questions from the audience. This is part of a fundraiser, the 2004 fundraiser for the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities, the American Spirit Series, an evening with John and Abigail Adams, America's first true political couple. This will occur Thursday, Feb 19, 2004, at Trinity United Methodist Church, 18th and Broadway in downtown Denver. The tickets are $35, and you can call at 303-894-7951, extension 18, or you can purchase tickets online at CEH.org. John and Abigail Adams, before we unmask you, talk about pay and how much you got paid. Abigail, was it a hardship to go from being married to a successful circuit riding lawyer who must have done well financially at the time to somebody now who first was a vice president and then was a president? How much did the pay drop, the salary drop?
My good man gave up building of what was a very promising legal career in order to serve his country. And that was a tremendous hardship for us because he was away so much. He had been away on the circuit, but of course he was being paid as a lawyer to do that. Then he neglected the law practice, and I took over more and more running our farm. The farm provided a great many of our immediate personal needs as far as food, and I also began to look for ways to economize. When he was off in Europe waiting for the peace treaty to be negotiated, and in the meantime negotiating loans for us to keep this country afloat, the Dutch loans, I would ask him to send me specific items, silk and linen handkerchiefs and pins and certain luxury goods, which I knew I could convert to ready cash, because I would send it to my relatives in Boston who would in turn sell it for me, and that was how I managed to pay the taxes. Many things we could do with barter, and I had produce that I could exchange, but taxes had to be paid with hard money. I only wish they could have turned around and paid the troops with the hard money. because very often the pay was simply the promise that they would pay you eventually. And we knew that we had to look to each other and we had to look to our own resources. And I'm very proud to say that when we did pass on from this life, we left an estate of almost $100,000.
Which was an astronomical amount of money at that time.
We were extremely fortunate to have such wealth.
And John Adams, what were you paid as the vice president and then president of the United States?
I don't remember the exact amount. It was a trifling sum in those days. I did better on the farm. But it was the idea of serving. When I was asked to serve, I served. It seems to me that there's no greater honor that one can bestow upon one's country than to serve it, and there's no greater responsibility that the able in our society have than to give all of their energies for the liberties of all people.
And however difficult it was for us to be separated from each other, it was worth it, because I always knew that my good man was needed to serve all of the people, and if that meant being separated from him, then that was what we had to endure.
Earlier, I listened to one of your listeners talk about sacrifice. I spent more than 12 years away by myself and with Abigail in the service of the people of this country. That is a significant sacrifice. 12 years living very frugally. Several of those years were spent in the English countryside among the people we had just separated ourselves from. We were treated badly. We were called bumpkins. It was very difficult, and yet I did it willingly, gladly, and would do it again.
And I stayed home looking after children and minding a farm that would have gone to rack and ruin without me, and I endured all of that because I knew that he was needed elsewhere.
When you are not John Adams and Abigail Adams, will you introduce yourselves? Abigail, you first.
My name is Mandy Dick, and I live in Louisville, Kentucky. And I am a student of history and the humanities.
And you are an actor as well.
I have an acting background, yes.
And a lot of scholarship about Abigail Adams.
Yes, I've been doing Chautauqua for something like 10 years now. And
always as Abigail Adams, or are you sometimes
other
characters?
I have several different characters that I portray. Lucy Clark Cron, who was a middle sister of George Rogers Clark and William Clark, who was on the Lewis and Clark expedition. And I portray Pauline Cushman, who was a Civil War spy and sentenced to be hanged for her spying and fortunately lived to tell the tale. I have several different characters that I interpret.
And President John Adams, who are you when you're not John Adams?
I am Bill Kristol, and I am a congregational minister. That's how I understand the congregationalism of John and Abigail Adams. I live it to some degree, although it's certainly theologically much different from the way it was back then. And I, too, I'm a historian by training and have done a number of other Chautauqua characters through the years.
Talk to us about Chautauqua. It was, tell us what it is.
The original movement, of course, occurred in a place in New York, upstate New York, called Chautauqua. It was a lake. People would gather there in the summer. They would escape the heat of New York City. And cultural programs unfolded there, all sorts of lectures by prominent people, musical programs, educational programs. That was the Chautauqua movement. It actually got carried on the road to all of the small towns of Midwestern and Western America. They'd set up tents in the town. A visiting Chautauqua company would come. They'd set up tents, and for a week, the town was filled with entertainment and culture. You could hear William Jennings Bryan deliver his Cross of Gold speech. Teddy Roosevelt would be on the stump. Generals from the Civil War would talk about their defeats and their victories. It was an extraordinary thing. That movement died out in the 1920s. It was revived in modern times by a number of people, Clay Jenkinson and Ev Albers, particularly. Ev is the head of the humanities program in North Dakota, and Clay is a national scholar of Thomas Jefferson. Clay is probably one of the best-known historical interpreters that one can ever find, Rhodes Scholar, Danforth Fellow, etc. It was those two who decided that they would take tent programs to the little towns of the upper Midwest, and they erected these tents, and people would dress up and be historical characters. The medium is getting refined. The scholarship is much deeper, and most of us who do this take it very, very seriously. We strive for historical accuracy, But we also understand we've got to answer our listeners' questions. When they ask, they want to know, and so we step out of our time to do it.
And so when you're performing, as you will be doing on February the 19th at the Trinity United Methodist Church, how does it? What happens? You do a set piece with each other, and then you take questions from the audience?
The first part of the program is a monologue, if you will, from each one of us of something about our lives. And then we open the floor for questions. And usually that takes us far-ranging because people have a lot of questions for the historical people.
Is this a good thing for kids to go to?
It's a wonderful
Absolutely.
Thing.
In fact, and then at the very end of the program, we do break as we have done here, and we come back to the 21st century. But Chautauqua is an American institution, and it was the idea that learning could be fun. And they we were coming out of the machine age, and suddenly people had something they'd never had before, leisure time. And a lot of people decided that education was not simply for the upper class, the privileged class. It was for everybody, and everybody wanted to have a little extra culture, a little fun with education, to aspire to the next level. And that was the great impetus also for the Chautauqua movement. And I suppose one reason it tended to die out at the beginning of this last century was that finally you had schools that were really catching up to it, and there was public education available for most people, and the schools began to reach to do a better job of educating. But I think now with the volume of information that we need to master, this is a good time to bring it back and to make education fun.
Ina, the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities has a wonderful junior or young Chautauquan program. Kids who are of school age take on characters and perform as those characters. And I'm sure any of your listeners who would like to contact the numbers that you've given out.
I will give them out again. I think this is so wonderful. It is a wonderful way to learn about a period of time, learn about major characters in American history. It's painless. It's a terrific evening. Parents, if you want to bring your children to something that I think will be rewarding for all of you concerned, think about doing this. This is the 2004 fundraiser for the Colorado Endowment for the Humanities, the American Spirit Series, an evening with John and Abigail Adams, Thursday, February 19, 2004, 7:30 to 9:30 at Trinity United Methodist Church, which is in downtown Denver, and call 303-894-7951, extension 18, or you can go online at ceh.org. This is the sponsors here are Frontier Airlines, Vectra Bank Colorado, and Republic Financial Corporation. President John Adams, his beautiful wife Abigail Adams, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you very
a
much.
Pleasure.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Talk that stimulates your mind. AM 1150. AM 1150 KNRC.
I own a chain of spas. We offer mud baths, hydrotherapy, everything to de-stress our clients. So if we run into a cash flow problem, the last thing we want is to start stressing out ourselves.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It's very calming.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
It's great to be camping, Raymond, and such a beautiful night. I love nature.
Except when it stops.
You're constipated?
Oh, Rainy.
Here, try Phillips Chocolate Cream Chews.
They taste great.
Unlike many overnight laxatives, Phillips Chocolate Cream Chews are stimulant-free. They work more naturally with your body for comfortable, cramp-free relief. Feeling better this morning, Raymond?
You better believe it.
Phillips, comfortable, cramp-free relief.
Hi, my name is Larry. I'm from Laramie. I work for a lasso manufacturer in logistics. I like linguine and looking out the window for long periods of time. My boss thinks I'm lazy. Hope I don't get laid off.
Sounds like Larry might have a thing for a Sullivan Digital Dock L Work Center. Just $99 with a free hutch at this week's Office Max Business Savings event. Also, buy one HP multipurpose case, get one free at Office Max. Unbeatable savings is our thing. What's your thing?
Guess I'd move to Chicago. Heard they got a train there called the L.
Offer ends January 31st. See store for details.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Are you hoping to do something creative with the new year? Take a class at the Art Students League of Denver. Learn drawing, oil painting, wood carving, wheel throwing, printmaking, and more. Classes are offered for the experienced artist as well as the beginner, and schedules and class lengths vary. Inspire your inner artist and call the Art Students League of Denver at 303-778-6990. That's 778-6990. Or go online to www.asld.org.
John Elway is going to the playoffs. They'll help pay off your current vehicle and get you into a new 2004. Same low, no haggle prices, same price match, plus a money-back guarantee. John Elway, honest.
Dominic and Bill.
No, you can buy an apartment for $300,000.
Yeah. So you've got this big, nice house.
But the rats come with it.
They do.
If you're lucky, you pay extra for the gay rats.
Yes, exactly.
Very nice. Plus, they don't reproduce.
Yes.
And they start giving you advice on dressing these rats. But
and this guy
they dress my pussycat. Yeah. It's called Queer Rat for the Straight Pussycat.
Dominic and Bill, weeknights from 6 to 9 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:58 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. Wasn't that fun to have John Adams and Abigail Adams? I have to laugh because they really were in full regalia here. They were dressed as they would have been dressed in their time in the 1700s. And I remember somebody in Bay Area Radio in San Francisco who once had a stripper on who was completely nude, but it was on the radio. You really are. But the imagination is a powerful tool. Okay, tomorrow, let me give you the rundown. Tomorrow, we are going to be joined by Stanley Greenberg, who was Bill Clinton's main pollster. He has written a book called The Two Americas, Our Current Political Deadlock and How to Break It. So you've got the Reds and the Blues, and they are at each other's throats and split down the middle. I'm really interested in talking to him. And also Friday, and I'm very interested in talking to Kevin Phillips. He's a very respected Republican strategist who has written a book highly critical of the Bushes called American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Gotta listen to him. Next week, James Fallows from the Atlantic Monthly, Blind into Baghdad, and David Denby, movie reviewer for The New Yorker, how he got suckered in that tech boom. He lost it all when he tried to make so much and buy his soon-to-be ex-wife out. Joe Anderson, thank you so much for your excellent help today. Thank you, Jordan Lyles. It's wonderful to have you back. Thanks to all of you who called and listened. Doug Kellett is up next. And you are listening to AM 1150 KNRC. I'm Enid Goldstein. Do something generous. Will you really be patriotic if you do that? Leave the world a better place than you found it. I'll see you tomorrow at noon to 3 right here on
KNRC 1150. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 49 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. Police are investigating two robberies in three nights at a Blockbuster video store in Englewood. The first holdup was Saturday afternoon, the second last night. Detective Perry Shelfeffer says it's not often one sees a business establishment being so popular with thieves.
Actually, it is unusual to have two robberies in the same location a couple of days apart. And we just have to investigate each one as a separate incident and try to do our best to solve those.
Shelfeffer says Blockbuster helped itself by having a safe that the clerks cannot open, reducing the amount of cash it lost. He added that Blockbuster helped the police by producing a tape that is not for sale, namely surveillance video of both robberies. The question of who should redraw Colorado's 7 congressional districts is far from resolved. At least that's the sentiment of the state's Republicans, who today asked the U.S. Supreme Court to temporarily block the redistricting map crafted by a judge. They claim the redistricting should be done by lawmakers and not a judge. The state legislature was unable to agree on a new map after the 2000 census, so a judge provided one instead. GOP lawmakers passed a different map at the end of last year's legislative session. Democrats sued to block that new map, a move that was upheld by the state Supreme Court. That set up this latest move by the Republicans. Investigators in Aurora are still working on yesterday's shooting and kidnapping in the 800